go start your own restaurant. And he said to him when he left to do it, you have no home to come back to.
Harsh.
Like, oh shit. Those guys are serious.
Whoa.
Hot Mike says, roll for host.
9.
Generate.
14.
Good.
I don't. 18. I didn't
want to host. Ooh. All right.
Up in the place.
The chisel whizzle is going to start this bizzle.
Never call me a chisel whizzle ever again. That is the worst. Who are
the
you?
The whizzle chisel is the Weather Channel to Snoop Dogg, though.
And Snoop Lion, please.
Snoop,
let's
God,
be accurate.
You're right.
He had a religious epiphany.
I'm Mike. I made the horrible nickname for Chaz. How are you doing?
Josh,
welcome.
Josh can say his own name.
Welcome to the Escort Mission Podcast. It's been 2 weeks. We had been 2 weeks before, so we're getting some spaced out shows, but maybe we'll get back on track. Maybe not. It will be a mystery to all of our listeners.
Maybe we'll space out more.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go for like 6 months. Forget we exist, and then bam, back at you.
As if nothing had happened.
Right.
Like, nope. Welcome back.
But
we all came out of a coma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the show where we discuss all the things that we want to. Josh, what happened?
All right.
This week?
Guess what came out? Dark Souls came out for PC,
yes.
Guys.
Prepare to Die
edition. A whole other opportunity to
very non-aggressive.
Play Dark Souls. It came out like a day before Guild Wars 2 did, but I still had to buy it because I wanted to support them and another opportunity to play it a little more. The PC port is kind of like bare bones as far as PC ports of anything go. But who cares? It's a phenomenal game. You get into it, even if the frames are capped at 30, or it doesn't like run at super high res with crazy, ridiculous textures or anything. Rock Band Billets came out. We just played that for 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. 10 seconds ago. What'd you guys think?
I thought it was. Mike said accurately, I think, that it feels less awesome than playing Rock Band.
True.
Which does feel pretty awesome. Particularly guitar and drums and vocals.
The
mechanism of this game is there. Each Rock Band song is compressed into two input tracks. So there are the five instruments you're familiar with from Rock Band 3: guitar, drum, bass, vocal, keyboard. Each one of those instruments is, you can switch on from track to track, from instrument to instrument, single player, and you are playing a two-note compressed version of that instrument's
chart.
Chart, yes. You're switching between tracks. I think basically from the very limited time we played with it, there seem to be power-up loadouts, which you can choose. And cause to harmonize with each other. Maybe you choose the best set of loadouts and get high scores and choose which track to be on at a given time. Seemed less awesome, less immediately fun. Although, actually, that's not true necessarily, because it's probably a lot more accessible than actually learning to play the five-note guitar.
It's a very different game. It's almost more of a puzzler than a music rock star simulation vehicle like Rock Band is, because like you said, every instrument is just two notes, but the strategy now is not so much in each individual track, it's switching between them. And because every time you switch to one and you do it for a while, you build up a multiplier which shows on the side where that track is and how many, like, two times, three times, four times. And now it's like, oh shit, I've been playing too much of the drums and the guitar and I've been forgetting about the bass. Let's switch over to the bass for a little bit. Oh, that's pretty cool. Oh, we should do the keyboard. You know, it definitely forces you, if you care about score, to switch between them. And that mechanic is very interesting and has not been in Rock Band before, unless you count Harmonix's earlier games pre-Rock Band, Frequency and Amplitude, which did the similar switching between instrument thing. So it feels like a mashup of those two things, kind of. And the songs they had, the Queen song was actually kind of difficult, mainly because I wasn't very familiar with it. It was like Dead on Two Legs or something like that, or Live on Two Legs. And the Foo Fighters song was pretty standard 4/4 rock kind of song, so it wasn't very challenging, but It's fun. It's just a very different kind of fun, and it's not as badass as even a simple Rock Band song can make you feel. So,
in previous to 10 minutes ago, I was actually pretty hyped about this game because I played Frequency and Amplitude. I was a big fan of Harmonix before they made Guitar Hero. And, you know, Mike and I are longtime rhythm game fans of all types. We played Taiko Drum Master together,
yes.
Bust the Groove, like, I don't know,
Space Channel 5. Like, even the Britney rhythm game, which I did not own. But
yeah,
I did
like. Yeah, I played the Britney's Dance Master, played the shit out of that game, or whatever that was called.
Is that like a Britney Spears license?
Yeah, it was all Britney songs. You never got to dance as Britney. But you got
well,
to
no
dance,
one can dance
as like
Britney.
Britney's backup
dancers.
Britney
can often not dance as Britney.
And you were like Britney's backup dancers. And when you did really good, she'd like pop up and do a solo for a second. But you didn't get to play while she was soloing.
Nice.
What else? I'm a big fan of DJ Max and DJ Hero, et cetera, et cetera. So I was looking forward to this because I thought it would be a bit of a throwback, like, take all the new Rock Band cool shit, take my whole Rock Band library and be able to play a fun game in like Amplitude style in it. But just in 10 seconds, I made an instant judgment call that it's a piece of shit because it like way oversimplifies. It totally feels like a devolution. Like it's two buttons. The whole thing's two buttons?
Yes.
I thought it was going to be three or four or something.
Well, it's kind of two buttons times five, really.
I knew it was two buttons. You hadn't heard that?
I didn't know it was two buttons either, look closely
at the screenshots. I thought it was going to be more like Amplitude, which at least I in my memory was at least three. I don't know.
I think they were three, yeah.
No, it's not a game about the skill of playing the plastic instrument, right? Or playing the drums or whatever. It's a game about, it's as Mike said, much more of a puzzle game.
Yeah.
Right? Score maximization.
Yeah.
You know, be good with the two buttons, but the game part of it is the broader thing.
It looks well executed, and it's, you know, cool in theory. Like, it supports my whole Rock Band library.
Yeah, that is cool.
That feels necessary at this point. So like, that would have been a huge
How much is
loss.
It? Is it?
It's really totally worth it, because it's like
15 or 20.
It's 15 or 20 or something,
and
it's like 30 songs. So even if it were just a song pack for Rock Band...
Yeah.
It's worth it, because you can play those songs back in Rock Band. It goes both ways.
Cool.
Yeah. And it plays all your existing Rock Band songs, if you already have any. I thought it was going to be a great way to like go back and play some of my songs again. But
can you imagine?
Now I'm not excited to.
Like, I assume they've been doing this all along. Like, as they've been making new songs, they've also been making the Rock Band Blitz chart, which, yes, is simple, but it's still different and had to be created. Yeah.
I kind of assume that the Rock Band Blitz chart is auto-generated from the existing note charts, because it supports your entire library.
Yeah.
And they have like thousands of songs now.
Right.
So I don't think they went back and added a Blitz chart to every one of their DLC songs, because they might even have to make you re-download them in that case. I don't think it does. I think they just auto-generate
some algorithm
in a very specific algorithmic way, not a random way, from maybe the easy. They take the easy chart and they just reduce it to two notes.
You know, no, it's definitely not easy, because even though it's two notes, even on the songs in the demo, you were playing like every note they were playing. So it wasn't
medium. It's not every note.
I don't know. It was pretty close. If it wasn't expert, it was hard, I think.
Okay.
But those weren't especially hard to
play. But hard and reduced down to two notes is, pretty easy.
Right.
Well, it's easy as a rhythm game.
I don't know, but I think that
is
problem
is a rhythm game slash puzzler, or a puzzler slash rhythm game, right?
Yeah, I think the algorithm, however they figured out, is still very interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting.
You know, like how they figured out.
Like
how
maybe
to do
they
that.
Went back to every song and decided whether they were going to make the algorithm operate on its hard or its medium,
right?
You know, and like fucking Dragon Force Dragon Force isn't in Rock Band. I don't know. What were one of the crazy ones?
Like
YYZ.
Yeah, why was he like anything Rush or Free Bird, something like that?
There you go. Maybe they chose to do medium on those, but they do hard on some like Weezer and shit.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Mass Effect 3 Leviathan DLC came out this week.
Oh.
Haven't had a chance to try it yet.
Nor have I.
But I'm excited about it, and it came out this week. So
what's
I had to
the deal with
it
that?
Real quick.
Is it?
It's the first single player one.
It's
right?
like a $10 DLC pack.
Yeah.
I think it's 10, something like that, 800 points maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's like maybe an hour or two or three long mission. It's like. It takes place before the final fight of the game.
Okay.
So you, like, load one of your last saves.
Yeah, gotcha.
And you just go out and you fight this like cool ass looking Reaper thing called Leviathan. It's mm-hmm. like a dragon Reaper or something. You go somewhere and you fight that shit, and it's a DLC mission. They've had a history of making phenomenal DLCs, yeah. like Shadow Broker and Overlord, etc. from ME2. Yeah. So this has got to be great. So I'm looking forward to it. Also, because I haven't replayed the extended ending,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I want to go back and do both of those at some point. But I don't know if I'm going to actually get on that immediately, or maybe it'll wait until the next DLC or something. Because I'm kind of busy now. What else? Oh, fucking Kenji Kaito, another executive producer of Last Guardian.
Dropped out, right?
Dropped out of the company.
That shit is not looking good, man.
Like, this is, I went back and looked, and so the name we were, trying to think of when we were talking about Ico, et cetera, a while ago was Fumito Ueda.
Mm.
He was the project lead on the previous games, on Ico and Shadow of the Colossus, and he was the lead on this, too, and Kenji Kaito and Yoshifusa Hamaya were both executive producers now all three of them are off the project, are out of
wow.
the company of SCE Japan or whatever. But supposedly, like, maybe Fumito was still like contracting with them to help finish it up. That was the status 6 months ago or whatever. Oh man, I just hope that game comes out.
Yeah,
I'm at this point, I'm just crossing my fingers that it even sees the light of day and it doesn't become a fucking
vaporware.
Yeah. Duke Nukem or whatever.
Will it beat Half-Life 3? That's the question.
Half-Life 3 isn't even, like...
A thing.
Well,
yeah.
First of all...
Gabe's just going to put it on Steam with no fanfare whatsoever.
Half-Life 3 is a meme. If they made another game, it still might be Half-Life 2 Episode 3.
At least they could count to 3.
That's the most logical thing they would do. Like, they never finished that story, and that's what they actually planned.
I'd be fine with that.
Yeah.
Anyway... But the majority of my time, I think I need to spend talking about Guild Wars 2. Guild Wars 2 came out, and it's fucking bomb. And there's about a million things to talk about regarding it.
And Josh showed me at least 20 of them.
At least 20 of them. Like, just packed it. I was like, I only have his attention watching Guild Wars 2 for maybe 30 to 2 minutes.
There was a fly buzzing around. It was competing for attention. He tried really hard to beat it. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
No, it looks really sweet, actually. I almost, like, you got both me and Robin, like... higher, you know,
pretty hot and bothered
by it. Not enough to buy it, but enough to consider maybe thinking about buying it.
It's really, really good.
It's really well done, yeah.
It, you know, I've played a bunch of MMOs, and it's probably the first MMO since WoW that feels like much evolved. Like, you know, other things are more baby steps. Rift, I'm a big fan of, and I played a lot, and I did think it evolved from WoW in a number of ways. But this just kind of takes more risks. It does even more things differently. It, you know, throws out the rule book in more ways. And it's really successful in almost every way. And the launch went great. There's a couple things that are down, like the auction house is still, I think it's still down now about 10 days in or something like that.
The European region had issues. 7 days in.
The European region has had many issues over the years.
What issues?
Log on issues, server queuing, etc. Europe
actually capped their servers completely out, and yeah. they had to bring a couple up.
So much so that they who's the publisher?
I mean, it's Microsoft, ArenaNet.
Right? So I'm not sure
if it's still going through NCSoft. I haven't seen NCSoft's name anywhere on it.
It seems like it's just
ArenaNet.
They actually stopped selling the game in Europe.
They didn't know they did that in the States too,
so as to not overload the servers, which had been capping out specifically in Europe, but I guess maybe elsewhere as well,
A couple days later, they did that to the States too.
I mean, that is service to your fan community above and beyond what you could possibly expect of any for-profit corporation. Like, it's kind of astonishing that they would that they did that. I think it's super awesome.
Yeah, because the accounts they've sold so far, they want those people to be able to play.
That's amazing.
And they don't want...
Amazing that
they don't want
that.
The people that paid for it already to be sitting in queues.
Considering how front-loaded PC game sales are...
Yeah, no, like, it's true.
It's astonishing.
But I don't think this game is as front-loaded as typical PC games. I think this one actually might increase in sales over time. Like some MMOs. Like WoW did that, but it's exceptional, right? WoW eventually got up to 12 million or whatever mm-hmm. when they hit their peak, yeah. but that took years.
Punch the guitar.
Official. Called it.
God damn.
But they only stopped their online sales. I mean, they still had hundreds of thousands of copies on shelves that you could go find in the store, even though they stopped online sales.
Right.
But they also, you know, stopped temporarily shipping extra copies, too. Mm-hmm. But they'll turn it back on as they can bring up more servers. But they did have, you know, more than expected demand.
I just think that's super awesome.
Bring up servers as quickly as possible. In the States, there were actually no queue times to log in that I experienced or that I heard about people experiencing. Like even the Rift launch and other big MMO launches, there's usually some queue times, particularly during prime time on the first few days. But instead, what they did was, even though there's traditional MMO servers, essentially, there were overflow servers, like instances. So if your server was at its population cap, instead of you getting a queue time to log in, you were just put into an overflow instance. And so it led to some issues with, like, you couldn't party with people on the real one if you were in the overflow. And there were systems to try to help people get on the same overflow, but they were buggy for a couple days, but they seem to be fixed now. Anyway, so some stuff like that. But otherwise, it went really smoothly. A lot of shit works great. And there's a million quality things to talk about. The graphics look phenomenal. The quest system is not like a complete overhaul. There's still essentially quest hubs, but you don't have a quest log. Like, you just kind of go into areas and organically or naturally do things to help out nearby NPCs or things that are happening. So it is kind of a revolution or evolution on an MMO quest system. Although, when it comes down to it, it's still similar. The gathering is better. For example, an ore mine is instanced. So somebody else runs up to an ore mine, and it doesn't disappear. You can still go mine it.
Mm-hmm.
The exploring vistas and getting points of interest and getting XP for that kind of shit and 100%ing zones. Like, the Vista points are, like, on the top of some mountains and stuff, and they're hard to reach. They're, like, challenges to get places. There's so much encouragement to explore the world compared to a lot of others that it's actually... And the world is so gorgeous and diverse that it's really fun to go explore. And there's all these achievements encouraging you to go explore.
I just want to say the map art style... It uses an artistic fog of war, so places you haven't been are just not as detailed in the sketching of it on the map, as opposed to just being blacked out. I think that's brilliant. Every game should do that.
They employed a ton of really good artists, and all their concept art they've been releasing for years, that's often like 2D like paintings, almost like watercolor paintings.
Mm-hmm.
Those aren't just concept art. They actually integrated a lot of those 2D like paintings into the game. And they might be part of, like, a cinematic. Like, a cinematic might be this compilation of 2D...
Like motion
painting
graphics.
Motion graphic assets in layers of... what do you call the...
Parallax.
Parallax. And with maybe some 3D animated characters on top of it and shit like that. Like, every dialogue scene between one of the main quests or storyline characters is fully voiced and has, like... It goes into this scene where the two of your character models pop up behind a nice painted background talking. In that sense, it's kind of like the good parts of Star Wars, The Old Republic, et cetera, et cetera. Let's see. Combat's really good. They got a unique ability system that's a lot like Diablo 3, but it's kind of a hybrid between Guild Wars 1 and Diablo 3, where you slot abilities into certain slots. There's a bunch of starting zones. Like, a lot of MMOs do a lot of things well, but skimp on having redundancy, right? So they only have, like, one leveling path throughout the world instead of making, like, several discrete leveling paths so that you have more replayability. Like, WoW is one of the exceptional ones that has all this redundancy. You can level up with different characters in, like, tons of different areas multiple times with different characters or whatever. And this game has, like, tons of different places to level up or explore. You can instantly make PvP 80s, which is brilliant, so that it's like an eSport.
PvP level 80 characters.
Yeah, just maxed levels as soon as you buy the game and log in.
Like instant eSport,
It's like fair, like StarCraft or League of Legends. It's not, like, nobody that's PvP'd for longer or has grinded for a couple hundred hours in the MMO has better stats. Like, everybody has the same stats.
Do you say ground? Would you say ground? Like I ground? I guess. It's funny. Yeah. I've never thought about it before.
Yeah, grinded, ground.
Yeah. Like, it sounds weird to say I ground out a bunch of levels, but yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be like ground. A ground out in baseball.
Or like I ground coffee. You would say I ground coffee, right? Yeah. But well. Saying I ground levels, it sounds weird. Yeah. I don't know. I never thought about that.
So the small instance English. PvP matches are fun. I hope they add more. They plan to add more. And then there's big ass like world PvP, world versus world, which is like modeled from Dark Ages Camelot or other MMOs that did this thing that's unique, but were never in any other majorly successful MMOs. So they have these like huge battles with siege weapons and castles and you know, just an enormous map that takes place over a longer period of time, like 24 hours or week long battles, where you have to protect your supply lines of cargo shipments, like caravans, to your different outposts. You can spend time like getting NPC friendlies on your side.
Have you done that yet?
A little bit. Is it sweet? Those are the thing that has queue times. Because in order to make like all these servers competitive with each other, instead of having a situation where, you know, the server with the most people that want to do it always dominates, they have a situation where it's like a 200 player cap from every server in those maps, and they don't have multiple instances of it. So if you want to get in there, it's a really long queue time right now, a couple hours or something.
God damn, that's got to be the craziest netcode in the world.
It is.
Got to be unbelievable if you think about, you know, 600 or 800. I don't know how many different worlds can compete or servers, but if you're talking like 200 players from like 1,000 separate connections coming into one place that are all supposed to like have real time knowledge of every other player.
Yeah, the whole thing is insane netcode. Yeah,
yeah.
Uh-huh. And even though there's like these separate worlds or servers like WoW or whatever, there are ways that you interact with the people from other servers like all the time. Like you can join structured PvP matches with anybody from any server whenever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And the server browser looks like a Counter-Strike server browser. Like you're just like, oh, this server has 10 out of 16 slots taken, so I'll join them. And I think they're planning on implementing a thing where you can even like quest out in the regular PvE zones cross server. You just have to have someone join your server as a guest briefly.
Mm-hmm.
Like you right click join as or something like that. Yeah, it's crazy. The netcode's baffling. It works really well to the most part, but there are some issues they're still working on. The dynamic events are cool. The cost structure is brilliant because it's a one-time fee. You don't pay monthly. Right? So their incentive is not to waste your time. Every other MMO that has a subscription model, it's like their incentive is to get you playing as long as possible. Right. So they want you to have this like long grind.
And to make it as addictive as possible.
Right.
And to do as much of that like slot machining as they can.
Right.
Yeah.
And their goal in this was just to make it as fun as possible and fill it with as much like value as possible to get as many initial $60 sales as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then in order to support the people that are hardcore, they do have this whole cash shop for mostly cosmetic goods, right? So just like Team Fortress 2 hats or whatever, you can buy like aviator sunglasses for your...
Which totally makes sense in context.
for your character. Or like a ball cap, you know?
Uh-huh.
But there are a couple of functional things that might be worth... If you're not happy with the 5 character slots they give you, you can get another character slot for $10 or whatever. Anyway, what else? The die system is brilliant. You can just auto die, like all your armor that you equip is automatically dyed. Your current like dies pattern selection.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about getting gear that's the wrong color and then dyeing it. You permanently unlock new rare dies by like opening these die chest things. The customer service representatives are like active on Reddit, replying to like helping people also on Reddit, not just through their ticketing system. They're just, you know, amazing outreach. Literally more than 5, I think up to, I need to check, it might be at like 7 or close to 10% of all players of Guild Wars are active on, like subscribed to the Reddit Guild Wars 2 thread. It's like they hit 70,000 or 80,000 a few days ago, which is like you know, a decent percentage of the million sales that they've definitely made. Mm-hmm. They may have had a lot more than a million by now, though. A few of the guild things are broken. The mail system was broken for a couple days, but it's fine now. And their official forums are still down. So they're basically using Reddit as their official forums for now. So a few minor things they're going to iron out, but otherwise it's just an exceptional launch. It's an exceptional game. I recommend it.
Is there anything about it you don't like?
Just the things that don't work that I mentioned so far. Like,
you really have nothing bad to say about it except things that will work eventually but don't work now. There's nothing other MMOs did better than them?
Really, like, really little minor complaints about tiny things that are just, like, taste choices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the control system. Like, the when you go into options settings, like, there aren't quite as many settings as you might want.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't customize the UI as much as you might want. But some of those things come with time. It's like it's functional. It's functional on day one, and they might add mod support or add more UI features and stuff. You know, a couple months in, Rift started allowing mods like 6 months in. Once they had the time to prioritize that kind of thing, it's kind of just like really minor quibbles. Like, yeah, I could list more that are pretty minor, but they're not even worth. I can't even remember them off the top of my head. But there are little small issues, but mostly they do a lot of things better than everybody else.
Sweet.
Sounds like a glowing review.
It's awesome. Sweet.
That sounds good. Yeah.
I'm excited. I tried every... One of the things they do better than like a lot of games like this is you know, they meet that Blizzard standard of every character feeling fucking cool. Right? A lot of RPGs or MMOs like this that you might try, you'll try a character and you're like, this character's shit. Let me try another. This one's pretty good. Let me try another. Okay, this is the class I need to play. This one's the good one. Right? Mm-hmm. And Blizzard has always had this ability to make every single one of their classes feel awesome, even in Diablo 3.
And distinct.
And distinct.
Yeah. StarCraft.
StarCraft, their different races, etc. You know, Team Fortress 2 does that really well. Valve is good at it. But a lot of other companies, it's really hard for them to do. There's usually a couple classes that kind of suck. In this game, every class is phenomenal. And I had Altitus, and I had to try every character up to level 5 or 10 before I could really decide which one I wanted to commit to, because I knew they were all worth trying. So far, I like the Engineer the best, because it's really unique and cool. It's kind of like a Ranger, except it uses, like, guns and toolkits, and, like, I get a flamethrower backpack, and I get, like...
Also, makes perfect sense in context.
I can drop bombs, and I can shoot, like poison elixir gun stuff, and
You came to drop bombs.
Oh, man, it's rad.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Cool. It sounds... You know, every time a new cool MMO comes along, I go, is this the MMO that's going to be the one that makes me
Well, hey, it doesn't have
play?
The subscription, and I know that's been a barrier for a lot of people.
Is a barrier. Really, for me, it's the time investment, and I feel like this may be one where it's enough of a single-player-y game, and as Josh said, they've stripped out so much of the stuff that is meant to keep you there grinding that I could play it as if it were just a regular $60 retail purchase and ignore the MMO aspect and just play it as a game, because I always feel with other MMOs, like, there's a bunch of sweet, you know, AAA games that have come out over the years that I've never played. I should play those rather than this MMO thing, and this one maybe is in
that
class.
That's not really true. Like, you should totally, if someone right now were deciding and they had never touched Skyrim, whether to play this or Skyrim, I would easily say play this over Skyrim. Because Skyrim's the kind of game you can play for 10 or 20 hours, or you can, like, just plow through the story as fast as possible and get to the end in not that many hours and not really explore the world that much. Or if you did that to this game, if you, like, just played this game for, like, 20 hours, I think it would be a better experience than this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Skyrim's equivalent would be a little bit more story thorough. You know, you'd have more dialogue scenes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you might see some more dragons, and you might not see the coolest dragons in this game until higher level or something. But you'd see lots of cool shit, and you get to do it with friends in this game. In Skyrim, it's a very solo experience.
Yeah.
And a lot of those experiences will be similar in this kind of game, but you could do them with friends. So, example is, because I've spent more time in the game than the friends that I have playing it so far, some friends are busy, but are playing it when they have time. One of the funnest things I did was, you know, took a couple friends and we went and did these puzzles together. And it doesn't matter. This game does it better than every other game in terms of like being a higher level or not. No matter what area you're in, you're auto de-leveled to the appropriate level for that area. So my main is like 20 or something, and I could go down to a level 6 area, and my stats are auto de-leveled to 6.
Wow.
So level 6 quests are still challenging.
Interesting.
If I try to solo them, right? So I got with some friends and did these like jumping puzzle things I showed Mike a little bit of, where you know, there might be a cave somewhere, and you're like, oh, that's just a random cave dead end at the side of the map. But if you go in, you'll see, wait, there's some steps. I can jump up here. You jump up, and it's like, Jesus, now there's these floating blocks in the air that I can jump across to this huge portal, and then the portal takes you up into the sky out of this floating continent. Like, where the fuck am I? And then you're like obviously in some kind of weird like puzzle zone, and there's like lightning bolts shooting on these platforms, and there's wind trying to blow you off platforms. You're like jumping between them, and then there's like combat between them, and there's hidden chests at the end, and you get an achievement and a chest full of loot at the end. And they require teamwork mostly because they hide combat in the middle that is really hard to solo at no matter what level you are, because you're de-leveled to the appropriate level. So, cool. Shit's sweet. If you played it even for half an hour, we could have some fun, and you can get to it when you get to it.
Nice. Mike, how's it going?
It's going all right, Chaz. It's going all right. So I just want to jump into the middle of what I was going to talk about, because you mentioned the whole, you know, games that feel grindy and feel like they're really just money machines, slot machines, but not, you know, not real games. Because mm-hmm. I'm sorry to say, but I've fallen to
which game did you spend a bunch of money in?
No, I haven't spent any money yet, but it's one of those games where they really, really want you to just spend some goddamn money.
Uh-huh.
The Sims on iPad have a game called Sims Free Play, which is basically The Sims F2P. And I know that sounds horrible. Why would you even think about looking at that, let alone downloading it, let alone playing it?
Well, but, no, Sims sounds fun. Sims is fun. I played Sims a shit ton back
right,
in the day.
Right, The Sims is fun, but The Sims as free to play is not the game that
it doesn't
you
have
played.
To innately be exploitative.
Well, it basically is, and I realize Tell us it, how it and works. I still like it. Okay, so basically, you all know The Sims. If you don't, Just Google it. No. You know, it's basically a life simulator. You create a person and you build a house and you live in it and you have a job and, you know, you can furnish your house and you can better your career. You can meet other Sims. You know, you have little meters that represent, you know, last time you went to the toilet, how hungry you are, how lonely you are. Anyway.
Your goals are variable in these games. Tell me what your
The goals can be variable, yeah.
Tell me what your goal tends to be.
Well, and that's kind of... It's actually stripped down. It's simplified Sims. So the goal is literally a goal. There's a little flashing thing in the interface that says, tap for new goal. And it literally says, okay, your goal now is to do X.
Oh,
and
you have one at a time?
One at a time. Everything is one at a time. There is no multitasking in this game. You cannot queue anything. It's all real time. So every action you do, it will say, this action will take X amount of seconds, minutes, hours, whatever. And when you say, go do it, it will take, in real time, that long. So, for example, going to the toilet takes 15 actual real seconds.
Oh my god, don't play the game. Why are you playing this game? You literally have to stare at the screen for 15
seconds? Because
can you close the app
and then come back 15 minutes later? Yes, you can queue an action
but
for a
sim. But 15 seconds is the worst possible length to do
oh,
anything.
Oh yeah, but I'm assuming something takes 2 hours. So
oh no, it's everything in between.
For 2 hours.
If it's 2 hours, it's sensical, and then it's like Tiny Tower. It's like you're meant to play a couple times a day for a few
right.
minutes at a time.
And I think that's what it is, but... There is definitely, like, basically, everything, all the goals that you have to do, they usually involve either spending money, because you have to buy something, or you have to build something, or life points, which you get and you earn by doing the goals.
Or by paying cash.
Or, if you want money, you can pay actual money to get the money in-game, yes. And yeah. The thing is that I'm finding is that it ramps up pretty quickly to where, like, a goal will take... way more money than you have, and so your
or
only
could be
option
reasonably expected to earn through
it,
actual
yeah
play.
Yeah during the time of play it's yeah. way more than you think that you would ever have. Like, my next goal requires me to spend like $2,500, uh-huh. and I barely have $1,000.
So how do you give up on that goal and get another goal?
You can't. There's no giving up on the goal. You have to do the
goal
in
serial. So you give up on that
serial.
Character? Can you have a
no.
you switch to a different character?
No, well, because every game you play, I think, because I'm playing along with Robin, and she's pretty much the only reason why I keep playing, because we kind of, it's like parallel gaming now. She has the same goals in the same order as me, so we're just going through the same, like, linear
now,
goal
did you sync
thing.
Up your game so that you're playing together, like,
that,
multiplayer style?
No,
or is it
I don't.
This is just everybody who plays gets the same sets of goals.
You can add friends via Facebook, mm-hmm. which do give you some benefits in the game. There's a party boat that, depending on how many neighbors you have, i.e. people on Facebook that are playing the game, uh-huh. give you a higher level of reward, which is usually money or life points
gotcha,
or something
gotcha.
Else. So
yeah.
it's definitely social.
Farmville style. Yeah.
Yes, they want you to get everybody to play with you. I realize that. And they really want you to pay actual money, because you very quickly ramp up to having to pay way more money
right.
than you probably have. So your only option is to pay money or wait. So you either are incredibly patient, like most Facebook F2P games, or you're very impatient and you want to just do stuff, so you pay money to speed up the process. And I know everything about this is like the exact opposite of what I normally want in a game, but it's definitely feeding off my love for The Sims game, which I have played a lot in the past, and the fact that my wife is playing too, and it's sort of like a, okay, how far did you get today? Let's check in. Kind of a status report.
Uh-huh.
And it is, it's sort of like a Tamagotchi. It's like something you can check in,
yeah.
do a few things, feel accomplishment, get out, and do something. And if you say do something that takes 7 hours, it will happen while you're gone. So you just cue, like, okay, go to sleep for 8 hours. And when I get up the next morning, when I get a chance to check it, they'll have woken up and you get whatever they did.
This is your tiny tower, Mike.
Yeah.
I think this is my tiny tower.
It sounds exactly like yeah. Tiny Tower.
Yeah.
I would log into
That's why I feel bad. I feel really guilty about playing this game.
I would log into Tiny Tower maybe twice a day or something, if I remembered to, and play for about 60 seconds, 90 seconds, maybe,
yeah.
maybe 2 minutes. And, just enough to like restock all my stores, like get a couple new tenants into a couple apartments or whatever, in new jobs.
Yep.
Maybe build another floor, and the new floor might take 24 hours to build or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, new store or whatever. And then I couldn't really do much without just staring at the screen and waiting 20 seconds at a time for
yep.
another person to get on the elevator or something.
Yep.
That if you get to that point, you don't want to. You shouldn't be playing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
it feels bad, man.
Yeah, no, those games are not good. They're
right.
they're just progress quests.
Right, but it's
go
weird,
play
though.
Progress quest.
Cow clicker.
No, I've played.
I heard there's
I've
a progress
quest
too. I
oh,
heard there's
really?
A sequel. We
oh,
should go play it. Or you should download like Sims 3 for your PC and
we
play
did.
That shit.
Actually, we did. Robin reinstalled it and we rebuilt our house in
yeah,
Sims. It was
that
fun.
Was not exploitative. That sounds yeah. fun. You should do that
no,
instead.
I don't know. If the thing is, though, is that I keep wanting to play this game and I don't really want to play Sims 3
and
anymore.
You couldn't tell me not to play Tiny Tower.
Right,
I
know.
It. I did it.
Yeah. It is my Tiny Tower. But it's funny. We both agree that they're horrible games and they're exploitative and we shouldn't play them, and yet we did. Because we fall prey to the same thing that everybody falls prey to. It's because it is fun. It's fun, but it's fun in that seedy, addictive slot machine kind of way where you're
yeah.
like, oh, I'm waiting for the next goal. You know, they say gamblers are, you know, not built out of people who revel in winning. It's the chance to win something.
Yes.
And that's the thing. It's like, ooh, if I just wait a little longer, I get that next shiny bauble.
Yeah.
And
it's the thrill, the frisson of
good
the
word.
Time
I just,
when the wheels are spinning.
I just right? discovered that subreddit. I didn't even know that word or that experience.
What subreddit?
The frisson.
There's a subreddit for frisson.
There's also a subreddit for a different one that's even more rare. I forget what it is. It goes by an acronym. It's like AMSR or something. And instead of like the body goosebump chill thing of frisson, it's actually like an energy or a feeling that starts in your head and works its way down and is literally like about head orgasming rather than just body orgasming or something.
Weird.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's
so
weird that you bring
weird.
That up.
I just saw a scientific article recently on the body tingle being directly just a dopamine like release from your brain.
Huh.
Whatever.
Exactly
it feels
is.
Good.
Yep.
I don't care. Okay.
Real quickly on gamblers.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
They say of gamblers, I read this book called, what was that book called? The Biggest Game in Town, which is a book about professional poker play written well before the poker boom, written in like 1988 or something like that. Very fascinating book, good read, but the quote that has always stuck with me from it is that two professional gamblers, or gamblers per se, not necessarily just professionals, the next best thing to gambling and winning is gambling and losing.
Mm.
And that has always stuck with me about gamblers. Like, it's not about winning. It's about playing and doing.
Right.
And how great that makes them feel. Yeah.
So, yeah, don't play this game. Don't start down this horrible road that I've embarked upon. Okay, some other games. I want to start back at the top, because the big news item is not that I started playing that game. That's my failing of the past 2 weeks. The Escort Mission has been upgraded. The machine in which we record this wonderful podcast for you got upgraded recently. An external hard drive. I do all this on a MacBook Pro 2011 early era. The external hard drive where I kept all my media samples, old projects, like old episodes of this podcast, died about a month or so ago. Thankfully, all backed up. But I was like, okay, this is the time to finally do it. I'm going to take out my disk drive, and I'm going to take out the like 5,400 RPM, 500 gig hard drive that my MacBook Pro comes with, and I'm going to put in an SSD, and I'm going to put in an external hard drive. So I don't need the super drive, except I took it out and put it in an enclosure and works great over USB. So I did that a few days ago, and the SSD, it's a Crucial 256 gig, like 6 gigabyte SATA 3 drive, $200 on Amazon. Great deal. Works brilliantly. I freaking love it. It is being used as we speak. Highly recommend it. The hard drive now being in the computer and not connected externally is great, because the one bad part about having all my samples on an external drive that plugged in via USB meant that I had to be chained to my workstation area if I ever wanted to work on music and use samples. Now I can take my laptop and work on stuff anywhere because it's all in the computer and it doesn't need to be plugged into the drive. So that's great. I love it.
Yeah, fuck optical discs, man.
Yeah. Except I've needed one to rebuild my machine and install all of the audio software.
Yeah, but exactly. You needed
But after that, I never needed it again.
You needed it to install, which means the optical should be the thing at home chained to the desk.
Right.
The hard drive should be the thing in the laptop at all times.
And I think Mac...
Highly agree with this now.
Apple OS X, there's like that remote drive software.
You can install remote disk on
like a Windows PC and use its optical disk.
Yes.
And stream an optical from another computer in the house.
Yeah. So I love how Apple just keeps phasing out these things that you think are integral to the computer experience, but they really aren't. And I love it. So highly recommend doing this.
So what happens when you slide something in that slot now?
Does it just go thunk and it doesn't go very far.
Oh man, I saw this. The body still has the slot.
It's part of the unibody. So
this
it's
is totally
kinda silly now.
Off topic, but I saw this.
The crackers in there.
I saw this art installation, which was at, you know, some museum of the recorded sound or something like that in New York or Berlin or something. I don't know where. I saw it on one of the art blogs that I read. And this guy, for an installation, built just a tiny slot with no markings whatsoever into the wall of the museum. So it's just like the back wall or the side wall, exterior wall on the street.
The USB slot.
It's a CD slot. So if you put a blank CD in this random, happens to be CD sized slot in the wall, then it will burn something and spit out a disc a little bit later, which is like all the music and some video files that are used as part of the exhibition. They did like no publicity about it whatsoever.
I heard about that one, but I didn't like it as much as the USB, because it would take too long. You'd stick a disc in and you'd probably have to wait 15 minutes.
Yeah, you'd have to hang out. Yeah.
I don't know. I think that's kind of cooler.
There was a USB mounted in a brick wall on a street.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just happen to plug a drive into this USB in this brick wall, it would like give you some MP3s or something in seconds.
Yeah.
I'm going to say way too much about myself, but it sounds like a glory slot to me.
Yeah.
That's what that is. Nintendo Power is dead.
Uh-huh.
Like officially, although for most people it's probably been dead for a long time. But
true.
I just want to say, yeah, so just the story behind that, basically Nintendo outsourced the, I guess, at least the printing, if not the whole construction of the magazine, I think, you know, the editorship and the writers and all that, to Future Publishing about 5 years ago. And so they've been running the show, and their contract finally ran out, and Nintendo doesn't want to, like, re-up the product, so they're just going to stop putting it out.
As Egon said in Ghostbusters, like, 20 years ago, print is dead.
Yeah, in general, you know, it's not a big deal, because, no, I haven't read Nintendo Power in a long time, but I have to give props to that magazine, because back in the day when you got a copy of Dragon Warrior for the Nintendo with every subscription, and those strategy guides they did for, like, Ninja Gaiden and Super Mario Bros. 3 and Final Fantasy, man, that was the shit. I mean, that was really the only magazine that had current information about gaming, you know, when it was just Nintendo. And I had a subscription, and I looked forward every month to getting that, and it was bomb, you know? I mean, there wasn't a lot of competition, so...
EGM, you know, was out at the same time.
True, but it wasn't focused on the Nintendo, which was mainly what I was playing, I think.
So it wasn't a continuous advertisement for Nintendo.
Yeah, and I wanted a continuous advertisement for the thing I was playing. And
I had a subscription, too, for a year, I think.
Yeah, I didn't realize it at the time that it was what it was, but I didn't care because I was just a Nintendo fanboy, and it was fun. But
I used EGM back in the day more than Nintendo.
Okay. Well, then you don't feel the pain that I feel inside right now.
No pain.
No, you're cold, lifeless shell. Anyway, RIP, Nintendo Power.
Long live internet.
I also went to Vegas last weekend.
Yeah, what the hell's up with that?
Charles really was trying to check myself before I wrecked myself before going on that.
Yeah, fuck Vegas.
So the reason we went to Vegas, my wife and I don't know how she got this, but she got an email with a deal for the Wynn Hotel that was like a really good deal.
For the Wynn Hotel,
which we had only been to once.
FTW Hotel.
For their buffet, which is amazing. It's a very good buffet. It was basically a deal where we paid for two nights of hotel, and we got two show tickets and two buffets for free, which basically cost the same as the two nights in the hotel. So, I don't know. For me, I mean, yeah, it was hot. You know, you have to drive 5 hours to get there from where we are, roughly. It feels like a big fake oasis in the desert. You know, it's not really kid friendly, you know, but, you know, we don't have kids and we like nice hotels, and it was a very nice hotel room. And the show Le Rêve, done by not Cirque du Soleil, except if you didn't know that, you would think it was, was brilliant. And the buffet was great. So all the things we like about Vegas, which were those things I just mentioned, were good, and thus it was worth it.
Cool.
We don't go to gamble. We don't go to party and drink and go to clubs. You can only see Le Rêve in Vegas, so we saw a specific show. Mm-hmm. And the Wynn is only in Vegas, and that buffet is only there. So we did all the things that you can only do in Vegas, and so I it was fun.
Yeah,
I'm not going to say, like, go to Vegas, it's the best thing ever, but for what we did, it was fun.
You've described exactly the kind of Vegas vacations that I will take, which is to say a specific reason to go there. Like, I've always wanted to see Penn & Teller. That's the only place they perform. So if I get to do it, it'll be in Vegas, and I would go to Vegas to do that, you know. But, there's lots of other crappy things about Vegas. Weirdly, my wife loves to go to Vegas. She's all about it. They're going next weekend, the girls.
She's a woo girl.
She's kind of a woo girl,
to some extent.
Yeah, she likes to woo.
My
wife is not a woo girl at all. Yeah. She's pretty anti-woo. Not anti-woo, but she's not pro-woo. Man, I'm filling her filling her mouth full of opinions. Okay, some music. A little self-promotion. I'll make it short. I did put out a new album on Bandcamp. It's called Stringing You Along. I know it's horrible. Groan. Because it's an album full of solo acoustic guitar pieces. That's why it's called that. The main reason for doing this was because I don't really have much of a demo reel when it comes to, hey, I play guitar, you should hire me to play guitar at your event or production. I wanted to make a professional one that had a bunch of stuff recorded at the same time. So I did a bunch of covers that I've done in the past, plus a few originals. So now, if anybody ever contacts me and say, hey, I heard you play guitar, I do. Listen to this album. This is me. It's recent. It's recorded fairly well. You know, it's a breadth of choices, I guess, you know, some video game music, some classical, some, you know, traditional stuff. So that's out. It's free. Pay what you want. Shnabubala. That's just fun to say. There's an artist named Shnabubala. I assume that's how you say it.
I thought you just had a stroke.
Shabarada. Haragarabarada. S-H-N-A-B-U-B-A-L-A. Shnabubala.
Oh, man. That's a good name.
I love that name. Anyway, he put out an album a little while ago. I'm still catching up on this, called Snesology, where he did something interesting where he made a bunch of songs, mainly chiptune esque, but 16-bit era, new compositions using the instrumentation of certain Super Nintendo era games. So it's like he went to Chrono Trigger, took the specific instruments that soundtrack is made of, and then used that to make a new song out of it.
Not sampled the music.
Just didn't sample
the instrument.
Right.
Voices.
So if you listen to the song, you're like, wow, this really sounds something like it came out of Chrono Trigger, because he's using all of those instruments, even though it's not on the soundtrack and is totally original. That's pretty cool.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. And they're all pretty good. A lot of them are pretty long, like some up to 8 minutes. So he didn't just do like, you know, a test 30 seconds. Like, here's what it might sound like. It's really good. I also listened to the last thing that Josh gave me a while ago to listen to, James Blake, self-titled album, I think. Really good. I think he labels it as post-dubstep, which I don't get at all, but is a pretty good genre of music, tongue-in-cheek, I guess. It's kind of minimalist. It's almost like Steve Reichian in its, like, just constant repetition of, like, a vocal sample plus some kind of simplistic beat, but it sounds really cool. His voice is really neat. He's on Warp, so it was kind of, you know, it's that cool kind of music you don't hear but is awesome, both if you listen intently and if it was just on in the background. Like, it just kind of, it fits.
It's really cool. It's really chill.
Yeah,
he does the voice vocoder thing that Frou Frou does in,
On Hide and Seek
a little bit. He does it's really, really minimalist. Yeah, some vocal repetition and some really simple beats and stuff. Man, it's cool. It's chill. I love it.
Yeah, it's a chill, cool album, just all the way through. I finally finished the third season of Sons of Anarchy, because that's all that Netflix has until the new season starts, and then they'll put up the fourth season, I assume. I love that show. That's a good show. You should watch it.
Biker gangs.
Katie Seagal, i.e. Leela, and Peg Bundy. She plays a really good role. She's a hard-ass motorcycle chick mom.
Who's her best role now?
Oh, God. So, I don't know. Live action?
Is it Leela?
This is better. animated voice? Yeah, I don't know what competition she has.
Right.
I
love it when people like her, like, do their best acting work late in their career, you know? Mm-hmm. They're like Jeff Daniels in Newsroom.
Right.
Right? Phenomenal. Man, I love that
guy. I can't
believe
you didn't mention that
in
your piece.
And I love Newsroom. I just started watching it. I just watched a couple episodes so far. I'll give the full review after the season. But, yeah, after being dumber like 10 years ago,
yes.
Right? Brilliant.
Such
I love
upgrade
actors
from
like that.
Dumber to
he
awesome
also,
Aaron Sorkin.
Or Malcolm in the Middle guy in Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That guy.
You mean not Bryan Cranston?
No,
yes,
I mean Bryan Cranston.
Oh, right, yeah. He was the dad. Right, I never watched that show, so I'm not really familiar with people on it.
He was the goofy sitcom dad.
You're right.
And now he's in Breaking Bad, and he was in Drive.
Have you guys watched Breaking Bad? I haven't watched it.
No, I haven't watched it.
I haven't started to get in, because I know it's a huge investment.
Here's
to get
the
into
thing.
That show
is, I know that it is excellent, because I've had,
right,
obviously, plenty of people who,
because meth is awesome,
know what they're talking about,
right,
have said that show is excellent. But I've watched
so fun to
The
do.
Wire, and The Wire is so amazing and occupies sort of the same space in my brain.
Right.
Like, it's like a gritty show about what, you know, drug culture is really like and all this stuff. And The Wire is like, in my opinion, it probably is, in my opinion, the best piece of filmed entertainment ever created. As a totality.
Better than, right, The Wizard?
Well, have you watched every season,
what,
of it?
If you, as the whole show, yeah.
Have you watched all of it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's amazing. I literally think it's the best thing ever put on film. So I don't want to, it's fucking depressing, and I imagine so is Breaking Bad, and so those shows are hard to get into. And B, I also don't think it'll measure up. I'm worried that it won't, so I don't know. That is what has personally kept me from watching Breaking Bad.
That's a little bit similar to my feeling on it. It does seem like one of those really good but like project things. It's almost like work.
Yeah,
like, I want to experience focus that on it. Yeah,
right. So it's like on my task list.
Yeah,
not on my like leisure time activity list.
You don't
right?
you don't chill with Breaking Bad. You
no
right
focus.
Yeah,
but I will say I watched the first episode of Breaking Bad ages ago.
Yeah,
and I found it like really painful to watch personally. Mm. Not that it's bad. But like when I watched the movie Son of Sam or something like that, like the violence just got to me.
Yeah.
Unlike other movies that I watched that are like hyper violent that don't get to me at all. Son of Sam was just like, I could tell it was well made and I was just like, this is really unpleasant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And the first episode of Breaking Bad wasn't super violent or anything. I'm just kind of comparing it. Like I got this feeling with the characters and stuff. Like I just felt really bad watching it and I didn't want to continue.
I totally get
because
that
of that. Yeah. But I know I should, and I know there was just one episode, it probably changes. But
if you're gonna do that with a show, you should do it with The Wire, because The Wire is astonishingly
so
great.
Similarly, I watched the first two seasons of The Wire.
Uh-huh.
Friggin' loved them, thought they were so outstanding.
Yeah.
But I just haven't gotten to like the project of starting season three.
Yeah.
Because
I think there's five.
Yeah. They change so dramatically between seasons, though. Yeah. It's almost like completely new projects. It's not like just churning through the rest of the series. It's like starting a whole new series.
Unlike a show like, I don't know, Law and Order, which is effectively the same for across 20 seasons.
Right. That's like five shows in a row.
Yeah, it really is. It's like some of the same characters carry over from season to season, but each one is dealing with a very different aspect of, you know, Baltimore city politics. And like, one's about the education system. One's about like, you know, stevedores and the union of guys who unload. So like union politics and, you know, one's about a mayoral election and the kind of shit that happens behind those closed doors. And yeah, that's a great show. Anyway.
Totally.
It's okay. Games.
This is why I suggested, don't rewatch Lost. Watch something good like The Wire or Breaking Bad.
Except I have been rewatching Lost, and Lost is amazing. It's still good. I don't know why you're so anti rewatching Lost.
It's not worth rewatching.
It is. It's great.
A show like that when there's these other shows that you haven't experienced yet.
But that's totally a judgment call, and that's not fact.
Yeah.
Lost is a great show.
My opinion is fact.
It's also fun to watch it with people who haven't watched it, so you can kind of gauge their reaction.
So you're watching it with people who've never seen it before?
Yeah, I'm watching it with Russ and Andy and Candace and Robin, and we're the only ones who've seen the whole thing.
That's
and they've seen like one or none of the episodes, and so it's really interesting to just... And it's also like any good show where you pick up on things that you didn't pick up the first time.
So the fact that you're watching it with people who have not seen it, I think totally justifies what you're doing. I am definitely one for going back and re-experiencing stuff. I have a set of books that I'm basically constantly cycling through. It like takes me, you know, 8 years to get through all these books. And every so often I read one and I'm like, oh, that's going in the stack of things that I reread on a semi-constant basis. Mm-hmm. So I definitely like to go back to things and, as you say, re-experience them, notice things I didn't notice before, just read them in a different place in my life and deal with them in a different way. So I get that, but I wouldn't do that with Lost yet. I can see doing that with Lost in like, you know, another 8 years or something like that.
And why? Why does it
matter? Because
I
like to be in a big different life space before I go back to something. It feels too soon for me to want to go do that, unless, as you're doing...
Started 8 years ago already.
Yeah, it's still feels
long.
Too soon. Feels too soon.
Doesn't feel too soon for me. It's great.
But I like the idea of watching it with somebody who'd never seen it before.
Yeah.
That could be fun.
I mean, I'm sure that's really the main catalyst. Been playing my iPad a lot. I started Infinity Blade 2, finally. I'm way late to that thing.
Is that pretty much the same?
Pretty much the same, yep. I tried out...
So the same, i.e. good.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. It's more of a good thing.
Okay.
So it's definitely worth playing. You already talked about Rockman Blitz. I also went through the whole demo of Dust, the Elysian Tale.
Uh-huh.
That was surprisingly good. I don't usually get into platformers very much, but it's more of a Metroidvania, right? Except you don't really do much of that in the demo. It's basically a platformer, but it's actually really good. You know, it's... looks like hand-painted backgrounds and enemies and animations, and it actually has the annoying sprightly character that follows you, which seems like it could be a bad, but she's not that annoying, and she's actually, and the dialogue is actually
pretty good,
not astonishingly horrible mind-slitting like it usually is in most games. So that's good.
It got brilliant reviews.
It's really good.
I think it's the sleeper hit of Summer of Arcade, because I certainly wasn't expecting that one.
I also played a free game on PC called, which is actually kind of old, but the reason for playing it is there's a sequel to it out now called Gravity Bone. Did you guys ever play this back in the day?
I don't know what this is.
No. So Gravity Bone is, I forget the it's like, you know, one guy made it kind of a thing. It's using a modified Quake 2 engine and tells this really, it's a short game. You could play through it in like 5 minutes or something like that. But basically, it just starts out with you have like two missions, and you find a briefcase, and it says to do something, and you like do that action, and then you start the next level. You find another briefcase, it tells you to do a different action. You do that action, and then I don't want to reveal what happens, but it basically tells this mini little short story in like 5 minutes of Quake 2 modified game engine, and definitely leaves you on this ledge of you don't really know what the hell just happened, and kind of makes you like, whoa, you know, it really makes you think about the game in an incredibly short amount of time. It's definitely worth experiencing. It's free. There's like no and it takes almost no time to get through, and it'd be interesting to talk to you guys about what you think the game means if you were to play it. Anyway, but there is a sequel out that's actually for pay on Steam, $5, called 30 Flights of Loving. Looks very similar in graphical style. I think it might be slightly upgraded graphics, but it looks like the same general engine, same guy. The reason why I got interested in it is because every review of this says, like, this game tells a better story in 13 minutes than other games tell in 13 hours. It's like short, concise, over long, convoluted. Like, that's the reason why this is an interesting game to play. So I haven't gotten around to playing yet, but after replaying Gravity Bone, which apparently I'd played before because I was like, oh, right, I remember playing this, I'm really interested in it. So
cool, do it.
I would highly recommend you guys at least check out the first one, and, you know, because it takes, like, no time. You could, like, play it while we're podcasting. That's how easy it is. But it's an interesting story. Anyway, also, okay, the last note, and this is, I saved it for the end because there might be discussion. I tried to get Sleeping Dogs. I was really interested after Josh talked about it to play that game. I still have my Gamefly account, so it was available. I thought it was available. I put it on my list. They couldn't send it to me. Apparently, it's not available.
No, they're like, fuck you sometimes.
They said fuck you to me on that. So instead, I put a couple other games in the queue, and they sent me Final Fantasy 13, which is not a game that I ever thought I would play, but I'm like, well, I already have an account.
It's here.
There it is. They'll send it to me. Sure, why not? Let's try it. So I've gotten about 5 hours into it. It's been a while since I've played, like, a AAA Final Fantasy single-player RPG game. I played, like, all the ones that came out in America except for 12 and 11 and 14, which are the MMOs.
It. 12 is a critical precursor to this one.
Well, I watched Josh
play it. I'm
kidding.
That's not true at all.
Although I did watch Josh play several hours of 12, but So 13 is quite different, and if you guys remember the reviews of it, the main criticism of it is that, and the joke that everybody keeps telling, is that it's basically a 20-hour tutorial before you get to the real game. And I don't know how much I want to say about it, and Josh and I actually had a conversation before about this, and I don't think I want to get into that because I think it probably takes a lot away from the game, but I definitely recommend this game. I think it's interesting, and it definitely tries to do something very different from most of the other Final Fantasies and most of the other single-player RPGs. Yes, the first 5 hours that I've played so far have been exactly what they tell you it is. It's a tunnel RPG. Like, there is not an overworld. You know, you've played a lot of sandbox games where you're dropped in a world and you can just do whatever the hell you want on, you know, 20 miles of real New York, you know, lovingly modeled. No, this is a very hyper-focused, like, we're telling a story and you're going to fight enemies in this tunnel, which sometimes branches off, but it's basically a tunnel. Like, it's basically focused. And that sounds limiting, and it starts off really easy. The battles are really easy. Like, I basically don't even have to look at the screen. Like, for the first 5 hours, I just press, like, attack, attack, attack. Yeah. Occasionally, I have to, like, do a potion on myself. So I want to criticize that. I want to say, this is a bad game. This is boring. I should not. it should not be this easy. And I'm playing on normal difficulty. Uh-huh. There's like normal and easy. So I don't know how fucking easy is, because normal is super easy so far. But I'm in it for the long haul, and I'm curious, because I like the story, which is a little convoluted, but if you read the data log stuff where they talk about the story elements, and if you save your game, quit, and come back, and load, they actually do like a, this is what has been happening in the game, like here's a catch-up paragraph about what's been going on. And it is a really interesting story and world, and I'm not so sure about the characters yet. The characters seem pretty stereotypical. The dialogue is not great. It's not.
What about the lead though? Lightning.
Lightning is cool. I will say, having a female lead character who's a badass and not like the typical kind of helpless female RPG stereotype, mm-hmm. or the sprightly annoying one, which they do have in this game. Which she's not too annoying, but you see that she is that stereotype, and you're like
the pixie.
You know, it's the manic pixie dream girl stereotype. That's kind of who she is. And they have the young kid who's inexperienced, who doesn't really know what he's doing.
Oh, that guy's an asshole. Oh, you just want to punch him.
Yeah, so he's annoying.
Did you get to that part yet? Oh, never mind.
The part where you want to punch him?
Yeah.
Well, not really, no.
Okay.
No.
Does anyone have amnesia?
Yet.
I don't think anybody has amnesia yet. It's all like there's the guy who's trying to get his girl back, and he's just kind of headstrong and like, I'm just going to forge ahead and you guys can do whatever the fuck you want. There's sort of the kind of stereotypical African American bro guy, Barrett
bordering
style
on racist stereotype
with a huge afro.
He has a huge afro that has a chocobo that
lives in
it, is super cute. I like that. That's awesome. I think that's all the characters. Yeah, there's just five main characters right now. So characters, I'm not really invested in them yet. Dialogue, kind of Action, very simple and easy.
Graphics.
Graphics are great. Obviously, it's a Final Fantasy game. They fucking always like...
Understatement go of the crazy. Century. They look phenomenal. Yeah,
they look really good. The battle system starts out simple, but it's getting more complicated. So I feel like this game it's a long-term investment. Like, it's going to pay off if you stick with it, but it's very easy to see how people who tried it for a few hours were like, this is complete horseshit. What is this game? You know, and gave up. And I feel bad for them, because I think it's going to be awesome.
I think particularly it had a problem because it is a JRPG, and it is coming from a line of games that are not that way.
It has, and so people were absurd expectations. Yeah,
well, but yeah, it always does. That's
it
the thing.
Came out of and is the literal successor to a whole line of games that were very different. So you can see why people who bought it as the sequel, the next Final Fantasy game, who didn't get what they were expecting, might be pissed about it. But yeah, they should play it more.
That fan
if
base
indeed,
it's just full of people with expectations. And,
well, that
and
is
ready to
the
whine.
Most rabid, yeah. Like. Crazy. That is where the term cosplay was invented. Yeah.
Well, because they're on 14. I mean, that's a lot of games in a series. Yeah. And, what other series has that many games?
And I'll agree. My input is that the beginning is a little slow, but it picks up, and then it starts a little easy. And then it actually gets pretty challenging, and the combat becomes really good. But it's long. It's a long game. It's like 40 or 50 hours. And I would say the first 5 to 7 hours are pretty slow and simple. But then it gets good. And the joke, the hyperbole is that's 20, but it's not 20 hours. It's like 5 or 6. The expectations, you know, are that, pretty soon you're going to find a town, and then you're going to be able to explore the shit out of this town, right?
Yeah.
Like waste 3 hours looking into every nook and cranny for a hidden barrel with like an ether potion in it, right? And there, those towns do not exist in this game, right? At least not yet, or at least for the first 20 hours or something. So you're really disappointed if you're expecting a town you could waste several hours in looking for an ether. Like
talking to everybody, exhausting every dialogue tree.
Go play an MMO if you're going to do that shit. I thought this one actually is the whole beginning is just like combat dialogue. And so I thought it was
an improvement, well paced.
It's very streamlined. Like I said to Josh earlier that I have this very like two-sided simultaneous feeling that I both hate how streamlined it is because it seems bad. And at the same time, I love how streamlined it is because it just like Guild Wars – it takes out a lot of the bullshit that RPGs throw in that pad time.
And it's just Square must be pissed because, like, they get nothing but shit about how their games are stayed and stuck in their ways.
And then they change it and they get bullshit,
And it's just an orgy of numbers and graphics. Like, it's just combat dialogue.
Final Fantasy 13, phenomenal
cutscene. Like, the combat is just full of sweet numbers, like, flying
Bahamut
everywhere.
Bahamut wrecks a planet.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Not yet.
So rad.
The combat is very streamlined, and it... I mean, so far, I literally just have to keep pressing. I should just get a turbo button and set it on, because that's how easy it is. But
so, as soon as it gets challenging, the best part is you don't have to press A a bunch of times like you do in other games.
You can queue up
attacks. You basically just start playing it like a manager. Like, you choose the AI loadout you want and change it in the middle of fights, depending on how it's going. And you're not forced to, like, micromanage every ability of every character.
Right.
You're basically just thinking, oh, I wanna tank range damage right now. And now I want, like, 3 buffers. And now I want, like, 2 debuffers and a healer. And you just keep switching between those loadouts instead of micromanaging the abilities. It's super cool. It's totally unique.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And, it's, you know, I mean, I didn't really have that many expectations besides just knowing what people have said about it. But I didn't really think this is going to be sweet or this is going to be horrible. I just kind of like, all right, FF13, there's a lot of baggage, but let's just do it. And I just plowed through it. And, the story is pretty interesting. So I think that's the main reason why.
Nice.
And the graphics, the music's good too. I mean, I'm not sure it approaches yet the classic Final Fantasy, like Nobuo Uematsu kind of stuff, because I don't think he makes the music anymore for the games. I don't know who does it now, but you know, that could also just be childhood nostalgia talking. That those tunes from like FF1 to FF7 probably are burned into my brain so much that it's hard to like let other songs in at this point.
It's more J-pop now.
Yeah, I mean the fact that its main song is a Leona Lewis song says a lot about where Final Fantasy has gone.
That says nothing to me because I have no idea who that is.
Well, the fact that it's a vocal pop star as opposed to Nobuo doing orchestral selections. Anyway, so
cool.
That's kind of my main project game right now.
All right, nice. Before
Charles,
I launch into all my stuff, I want to remind people to tell a friend about the show. We rely on
and have them tell a friend.
Spread the word, yes, please. Go to our website and click through the Amazon link if you're going to buy something on Amazon, and help us out. Give us a review on iTunes. Thank you for doing so. So what did I do? I watched a bunch of things, some shorter things and some longer things. One of the things that I watched... I watched a short documentary. It's 12 or 15 minutes. It's on YouTube, called American Juggalo, which is a documentary about the gathering of the Juggalos, which is the once a year 5-day music festival held on private land way out in the country somewhere in the middle America, like Illinois or something. That hosted by the Insane Clown Posse and many other bands on their label and occasional other attendees
like Tila Tequila
and Tila Tequila and stand-up comedy, whatever. This is the festival that has spawned the famous SNL sketch about stick meat. I don't know if you remember that one.
I just remember the Magnets parody.
So that's a
Miracles.
Parody of their video.
Yeah.
Ninjas on stilts.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone gets a pitchfork. Like, that was the SNL sketch of an actual promotional video done to promote this festival, which is almost funnier in its being true than the SNL sketch. Anyway, this is something that was very, very fascinating to watch because it's just like a window into a world that I do not occupy and never will.
Nor want to,
but drawing the interesting parallels to other activities. I mean,
like getting drunk.
It's a bunch of
having
crazy
sex in public.
People that I would never really. But there are also straight edge juggalos who don't do any drugs.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it is held on private land specifically so that there can be a literal, an open drug culture. Mm-hmm. So there's literally a place where you can go and buy drugs out of booths the same way you can go and buy stick meat out, ride on carnival games or. Yeah. What?
Is it like, how do they get away with this?
I mean, somebody could come, drugs? Theoretically, somebody could come on the land, like they could do a Ruby Ridge scenario and somebody could come on the land, but basically it's acknowledged and the people are aware of it. And it's kind of the police presence in the surround, I guess it would be like sheriffs, county sheriffs. They realize that it's like, whatever it is, you know, 10 or 20 or 30,000 people. Do we really want to march in there with our sheriff's county, you know, 30 guys and try and stop?
Weird.
Right? So they basically look the other way and nobody really gets hurt. And the sort of overriding ethos of that culture, that subculture, is family. Like everyone they talk to, at least in this documentary, and, you know, it could have been edited to make it seem this way. I don't really know the predilection of the filmmakers. Everyone they talked to just said, the best part of being here is my motherfucking family. Whoop, whoop.
Whoop, right? Whoop.
They do that every time. You know, prepare to hear whoop, whoop a lot. But basically what I found interesting was that take out all the kind of ridiculous posturing and the weird gang signs and, you know, basically it's just another subculture of people who enjoy something. It was like, strip all that away and put up cosplay and geeky stuff, and you could have been doing those interviews at PAX, and it would have been basically the same thing. Like, mm-hmm. if PAX were held in the woods, it would be that. You know what I mean? So I thought – I found the parallels interesting. It's very fun to watch, very interesting.
What was your expectation going into it, though? Like, what was your preconceived notion going into the film? Like,
my preconceived notion was entirely accurate. Right. I've actually read a lot about them. There was a good profile in Wired about Insane Clown Posse.
And the AV Club. They couple love years ago. Talking about the festival.
Yeah, it's a fascinating but thing. It's just an interesting subculture.
And did it change anything? Or it just yes, this is what I thought it was going to be, and that's what it was?
The thing that is most interesting about it was the connection I made with PAX in my mind. I was okay. Like, this is a lot like PAX, except it's about a bunch of shitty music, right? Like, if PAX were about music that I'd really dislike and, you know, came with, you know, a bunch of ridiculous posturing and, you know.
And clown makeup.
Yeah. So are they just, like, misunderstood? Like, because I know there's a lot of hate for them. Understood. There's a lot of hate for Juggalos, and everybody thinks they're dumb and or dangerous, yeah. Or something. I mean, is that just totally unfounded?
I think
unfounded?
That part is misunderstood. I don't think that they are a street gang, and I don't think you really need to fear. They're a bunch of nerds. They're just nerdy about what they like,
yeah.
Right? They're just a bunch of geeks who feel ostracized and found that subculture just the same way, you know, punks found the Sex Pistols in the 70s and whatever else, right? It's just another subculture. It's just a really weird one. I don't know. It's fascinating. It's worth watching.
Was there a lot of clowning going on there?
They do not clown, no.
No?
They wear clown makeup, but they don't no do clowning. The clowning
right. crumping? No crumping?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
I watched the first episode of Press Reset, which is the documentary being made about the making of Polygon, the Verge.com/gaming. So they're during the making
is that just
of
a subdirectory of a website.
So the Verge right now it's called the Verge.com/gaming. This uh-huh. is the website started by SB Nation, who founded the Verge. So they went and cherry picked all the incredible editors from every tech site. And said, like, we're going to do this better than anyone's ever done it. Here's a bunch of money. Make the Verge. And that's what came out of it. And they've done the same thing with gaming. Right now, it's verge.com/gaming, but
have
it's going to
really
be
called... Have they really started yet?
Polygon? Yeah. They're, if you go to verge.com/gaming, they have a ton of content. It's really good.
Okay. It's already started.
Yes. But they're building the site that's going to be their actual home, which is going to be called Polygon.
Right. So this is
going
to be legit game journalism, like Ben Kuchara from the arcade mm-hmm. level?
And it already is. It already is. I read it every day. It's good.
Does he write for them as well?
No, but Ben Kuchera writes for like Penny Arcade.
Only. Well, but I know, but lots of them write for many sites.
He's full time.
Okay. He's busy full time.
So right. This is like, I mean, it's every game journalist who you can probably name that's not part of Giant Bomb. It's Crescente, maybe not part of Giant Bomb and Destructoid. It's like everyone else. Ross Miller, I don't know. Anyway, it's fascinating. It's cool to see what they're going through to build the site. The first episode is kind of about the process of pitching people. Chris Grant is the one who originally pitched the idea to SB Nation. And so I think that it's going to be really interesting what goes into really doing a, for lack of a better term, a AAA website, like a really good website that happens to be about a, you know, gaming, which we enjoy.
Neat. Sometimes.
Yeah. sounds cool. So I'm hoping that it continues to be good. But the first episode was good. Watched a documentary called Jiro Dreams of Sushi, which I mentioned the other week. It's on Netflix. Or I take it back. It's on Amazon Prime. I don't know if it's on Netflix.
Well, and it's on iTunes.
Right, but it's free on Amazon Prime if you have that. Okay. It's really good. It's a documentary basically about perfectionists and what goes into... so at a base level, it's about the only 3-star Michelin-rated sushi restaurant.
In the world?
I don't know if that's true or not. I think that's true. But anyway, it's about a 3-star Michelin-rated sushi restaurant. The Michelin rating system is... if you have 3 stars, then by the standards of the guide, it's worth taking a trip to that country explicitly to eat at that restaurant. Like, you should make a separate trip to another nation.
Pilgrimage?
Just for that place. It's so good.
Wow.
This restaurant has 10 chairs. It is in a subway station. it's like down the stairs to the side. It's one of those sushi restaurants where you go in, there's no menu, you don't get to order anything, but it's a guy who's been making sushi, literally dreaming about it, thinking up new and innovative ways to make something that has been innovated on for 1,000 years, right? And who people in that country have decided is like the most refined, the best expression of this, you know,
man,
this as an art form.
I could, right? Never
you don't
go
get
there.
To order, you pay like $400. And they just serve you a meal.
Because the hype is so huge that if I didn't think that it was like, you know, tasting manna from heaven, I would feel so bad and guilty.
I couldn't handle it. Why would you feel guilty?
Well, no, just that because I would go in expecting that it would be awesome, and there's a large chance that I will think it's less than perfect, and then I'll feel bad.
Why would you feel bad?
Because the hype. You just hyped the shit out of this thing. I don't know. Like, I would feel like I dishonored him by not recognizing his brilliance or something.
Now, I would bet that none of us
would
recognize...
No, I would, because I'm not a huge sushi like connoisseur, so I would probably just be like, whatever, it's sushi, okay.
I think we would all go in and like have a really good meal,
yeah.
But none of us would be able to appreciate it to the heights.
Right, and I would feel bad that I couldn't appreciate it, so yeah. I'm like, why even go?
Which I think is true of most people who don't eat sushi on a very regular basis, because the whole, I mean, Japanese culture in general, Japanese architecture and art is like negative space, shadows, subtlety, right? Like umami is a Japanese, it's like frisson, right? It's another one of those terms. It is very nebulous meaning.
I thought umami is really clear.
Umami, I did too. I thought umami is like, oh, it's mushroom taste. No, it's not. Like, you watch this.
No, it's savory. It's not mushroom.
It's not. It's not that. It's not savory or a flavor or anything. It's like this whole other thing.
It's like a way of thinking or something.
Watch this movie and watch the 10 minutes where they describe umami.
10 minutes?
Like, there, it's not any, like, they have this to the nth degree level of understanding of these, you know, layers of flavor. It's interesting. You should watch this movie.
You can't handle it, Josh. You can't understand umami. Don't even try. Give up.
I understand umami.
You don't understand shit, brother.
So the movie is also interesting in the relationship between fathers and sons. This guy, Jiro, he had 2 sons, both of whom he took in as apprentices, and of course, in very Japanese fashion, drove them harder and worked them more than any
executed
other...
executed them ritually.
No, any sorry. Other apprentice in his restaurant. At the point when both sons were old enough, the eldest son succeeds the father in the business, right? The younger son, he said, you have to get out. He's like, go, start your own restaurant. And what he said,
compete
when,
with me,
what, no. Literally do that. not another branch of my restaurant,
right.
Not, you know, my restaurant too or anything.
Yeah.
Go start your own restaurant. And he said to him when he left to do it, you have no home to come back to.
Harsh.
Like, oh shit. Those guys are serious.
Whoa.
Because apparently that is what was told to him when he left his family at the age of 9. When they kicked him out the door and he had to go make his own way in the world. Like, serious, interesting life, interesting guy, interesting philosophy, just fascinating all around. And you learn a lot about sushi and the way making it is like, you know, writing a concerto. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, you don't know. You thought you knew.
I would eat that. I wouldn't feel bad.
I would not feel bad either.
The only thing I feel bad about is maybe wasting the money if I didn't think it was worth it.
Right. Well, there's that too.
But if it was free, like I get a free steak that's expensive, and I'm like, yeah, this is good. Or I'm like, eh, I'm a little disappointed by this, but I didn't pay for it, so.
I don't know. I think also the environment of going to this super tiny, like, hidden gem of a place would be kind of intimidating.
So it's like a year out to get reservations.
There you awesome. Go.
It's crazy. Yeah. So I watched that. I watched the new season of Doctor Who started. Watched the first episode of that. That's good. I won't say too much about
it. Yeah, right.
You don't like that? You don't like Doctor Who?
Oh my God. It's the cheesiest thing on earth. I don't think you can like it. You watched the
first half of season five, or the 2005 season, right?
No.
You watched the whole 2005 season?
No, I watched all of seasons one. Well, I don't know.
Starting in 2005, the reboot.
It's 2005 when the reboot. Yeah. Yeah. I watched all of seasons 1, 2, and 3 that started in 2005.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's like.
That's a lot for someone who doesn't like it.
I know. It is so cheesy. Like, it was just like one of my guilty pleasures for a little while, but I kind of hated it while I was watching it.
Uh-huh.
I wanted it to get better constantly, and it never did. It does. For singular episodes. Singular episodes are actually pretty decent, but then they just have terrible episode after terrible episode before you get back to one that's okay again. It's like Babylon 5, or like, it's just like trash sci-fi. I don't know how you could like it unless you grew up.
Wow.
Unless you grew up loving it, right? Like, I love Star Trek, and maybe if someone didn't grow up with Star Trek, The Next Generation, and they watched it now, they'd be like, this is cheesy as fuck.
Well, the first season is cheesy as fuck.
Right? And
most
I'd
of
be
it
like,
is cheesy.
Yeah, that's disappointing you didn't grow up with it. I admit it's cheesy as fuck.
Yeah, you didn't inherit
Doctor Who.
But
it's still really
Who.
Good, and I try to convince somebody, and I probably wouldn't be successful. So I think that's what those fans were like. I think they liked it in childhood. If you'd never seen any of Doctor Who, you started watching to the 2005 season, you have to admit it's cheesy as fuck.
That is totally not true, because you're describing my experience, and I really love that show.
Oh, my God.
I do not think that it is consistently amazing. There are cheesy episodes, particularly in the first three seasons when they had no budget. Like, that is as high budget as BBC shows
get. Is it really high budget now?
It's much more high budget. Like, the effects look drastically better.
I thought it was like an intentional low budget thing.
It is just like as expensive as BBC shows get. Like, BBC, famously, when you get high ratings, they actually give you less money. Like, It's craziness, yeah.
What?
Anyway, that show is really good. It gets much better. I definitely urge you to keep watching, because if what you dislike are the cheesy effects and kind of cheese factor, it gets much better.
And the really bad acting and the really bad lines and the really annoying plot lines
and the horrible theme music.
If you find the plot lines annoying, you should never watch again, right? Because it is not about a weekly monster. It's character interactions, and it's the idea of writing a character who has to force himself to be cheerful and jovial, because otherwise he'd cry. All the time, right?
I don't even know about the crying thing. I don't get that. Is that a secret?
Doctor Who? No. Doctor Who's been alive for 1,000 years, and he has blood on his hands from 1,000 years of war, right? And so he's like a bubbly, jovial guy, because there's no other way for him to continue along. Anyway, this is like specific to the character.
Okay, I know what you mean now.
If you don't like the character interactions, the whole show is basically about the doctor and the companion. And if you don't enjoy that interaction, you won't like the show. But I like the show very much. If what you didn't like was the cheesy effects, then you should keep watching, because it gets much better. So anyway, the new doctor, the current doctor, Matt Smith, is really good.
Is he good? I haven't seen any of him.
So are you in David Tennant yet?
Yeah. Yeah, I like David Tennant.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
He's cheesy, but he's likable.
Yeah.
But not all the other characters I don't like.
You don't like Rose?
I don't think I'm crazy about Rose.
Okay,
so here's a question, because for the record, I have never seen any Doctor Who at all, ever. Yeah. Josh, should I watch it? Is it even worth a no?
No?
You wouldn't even, not even an episode?
Well, you can watch an episode, sure. I mean,
okay. Here's what
you should
do.
How much of your time do you want to waste?
Here's what you should do.
I don't know. I don't know whether I like it or not.
Watch the episode called Blink, which is a one-shot episode. I don't know if you've gotten to this episode.
Probably not.
Watch the episode called Blink. It's a one shot. It's one of the ones that's totally divorced from the rest of the series. And if
see,
you,
that seems like a bad one. I want one that's representative of the show as a whole.
It's the show at its highest point.
But then that means everything else I watch after that will be downward.
If you want to think of it that way.
How else would I think of it? If you say, here's the
you
best
don't
you
can have
do
to consider like everything as being...
I kind of want to watch an average one. Like one that's
I can't name
decent.
An average one. That's a phenomenal episode.
Okay.
But it'll give you a flavor of what the show is all like, right. And it's a really good example.
Blink, okay.
So you can say, like, could I watch something that's like 75% as good as this and enjoy it? And if so, then you should go watch the rest of the show.
And this is all on Netflix?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think so. It's okay. Like all on Netflix streaming, okay. Which is why I watched it.
Yeah, it's definitely it's free, worth okay.
And it was there.
Yeah.
And the reason like I like it, because there are aspects to it that I like, is that it's like a fun sci-fi concept. The concept is super cool.
Yeah, no, the concept
and
is
I
cool.
And I love fun sci-fi concepts, which is why I put up with like really terrible execution
Like
when there's a good... Like Sliders, yeah. Right?
Is it like right? Sliders? Then?
Sliders is... It's exactly it's Sliders.
Very, but Sliders was fun, and it's still
terrible, but kind of fun.
But it was fun and silly.
Yeah, if you love Sliders, then watch the show. You'll love it.
Okay, all right. It doesn't sound that bad.
Sliders was so bad, but I love the concept of it, so I watched some of
it. Okay, all right. I get it. I get it.
Cool. Games. I played... Josh mentioned last show, the Android Humble Bundle. Bought that, played a lot of it. What was good on that?
Spirits.
Spirits is pretty good. I liked it. Anomaly HD, which I don't believe you mentioned.
I didn't try all of them.
Anomaly HD is pretty good. It is Tower Attack. So you get...
So the opposite of Tower Defense?
It is the opposite of Tower Defense.
Okay.
You are the people...
It's Assault.
Tower Assault, maybe.
Okay.
So there are... You know, Aliens, first of all, it looks amazing. Looks really, really great.
Well, it is HD.
It is HD.
It's on, in the title.
It's on Android devices. Looks freaking awesome on the Tegra and my Nexus 7. You're a group of like modern military dudes. So you have tanks and APCs and whatever, and you're planning your route through like aliens have come to Earth and they infested this area and you have to get past them and accomplish goals. Basically, so you pull out to a map and you define the path that your convoy will take, and then you pull in, and as you pull in, what you're basically managing are the buffs and power-ups. You can't decide on targets at all, but you can like put down a sandstorm over your guys in a radius that prevents people from being able to target them effectively, or a decoy target or whatever. So you're managing, you know, a bunch of these different buffs and power-ups as you get them, and they're dropped in from like as air support. Basically, when you kill enemies, you get another one. So that's really fun. Worth checking out. World of Goo is in there. I'd never played that before. That's good.
Oh, that's a classic.
Yeah. Bitrit Beat. I had also never tried that.
That is a classic and doesn't work on my phone.
Right? Oh, bummer.
You did mention that.
I played it on Steam, and I wanted it to work on my touchscreen.
Do all these games work on Steam, like Windows, or is it just Android?
I think it's Steam.
Yeah?
Okay.
Yeah. Humble Bundle stuff always runs on Windows, Linux, or Mac, I think.
Really?
And usually comes with the Steam keys for those, all of them, but not... necessarily 100%, and then some of them also run on Android. The 100% might not be applicable to Linux or Mac or Android, but I think it's always 100%.
It's always at
Windows,
least Windows
downloadable,
I'm sure. Yeah,
and it's almost 100% like Steam and Mac and Linux.
Okay,
yeah, I didn't even know. I thought this was an Android specific bundle, but whatever.
It kind of is, and it's called an Android bundle.
Yeah,
because not all their bundles are, you know, all the apps run on Android.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, you just click the Steam key.
Cool.
Play
cool.
On PC.
And then the Indie Royale bundle came out. I also got that. It's the Indie Royale The Getaway bundle, which is a lot more hit or miss than the...
All of those are more hit or miss.
Yeah.
Than
the Humble bundle.
I hadn't heard of any of the games in it.
I had not. The one I was the most excited about is Shattered Horizons, and that does not run worth shit, even at the lowest possible resolutions on my laptop. It's a full 3D like space shooter, which seemed really interesting. It was kind of like Descent, basically, except you're a guy in a suit instead of a ship, and you're fighting around like satellites or space stations in space. So you can blast off from them and zoom around, or you can clamp onto them with your magnet boots and whatever. Seemed cool. It's a full-on FPS, and it just crushed my laptop, so that was lame.
So Firefall is getting really close to release. Yeah. I don't know if they announced a date. If they did, it might be October. That sounds familiar. But they just started taking pre-orders for their cash thing announcement because it's free to play, all right? And they've never previously announced what they were going to charge for. But at PAX, they're doing these kits with, like, percentage off. And it comes with, like, bonus XP and, like, special emblems and, like, a custom skin of a motorcycle and, you know, weird shit like that. It's slightly
Firefall's
tempting.
Firefall's the kind of Borderlands-esque MMO.
Shooter.
Yeah.
Shooter. Right.
Yeah.
So
kind of like Tribes or something?
Not really.
I thought it was like Tribes.
Yeah, but
I mean,
more
vaguely, in so much as it's like you're a space guy with a gun.
I mean, you're shooting things, right?
Yeah, more shooting, more open world. I think Tribes is more like PvP only or something.
Oh, okay.
Tribes is in a map. This is a full-on MMO.
Okay.
Yeah, this is more of a. And I just bring it up because you mentioned the space shooter thing, and the beta is getting really polished. I've heard great things about Firefall, so...
I played the beta a while ago.
It was terrible a while
ago. It was
pretty
terrible.
Yeah. No, I heard great things about its current state of polish
cool.
and function. But the other one that I'm looking forward to there is also called... is called Warface. I love that name. It,
wow, that's the game where they're like, let's take two nouns from and throw them together.
It's made by Crytek. And so using the CryEngine 3 or 2 or whatever, and Tryon Worlds is helping publish it, although it's not being made by them, but maybe they're helping with netcode or something. And it's an MMO shooter or whatever that looks super high-budget polished, like AAA shooter. Like it looks like Modern Warfare 3 or something like that, quality of shooter, except
I'll need a $2,000 PC to play it?
Maybe.
So not going to play that then, all right.
Well, the... Modern Warfare's or Black Ops is blah blah.
But if it's CryEngine,
have always like had looked exceptionally good for low requirements. They've always run at really high frame rates, even on consoles, and still looked great even on consoles. You know, and similarly well performing on PC. So I don't know about this one, but at least the videos look great. YouTube's look phenomenal in this game, and it's free to play, which is crazy for this like level of high budget polish.
Cool.
We'll see.
So some other games that are part of that bundle, Analog: A Hate Story, which is actually the one that tipped me over into wanting to buy this thing.
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
That I did not, I've never played a game of this type, and I didn't realize how much. So this is a novel. It's basically a novel that you play with very that you read with very occasional clicking inputs that are basically like it could just as well be a book.
Mm-hmm.
And played, quote unquote, I read it for about an hour, and I think it's super fucking dumb and don't like, I did not like it at all. And people are talking about
it. Well, it's
a
hate story. I mean, you're not supposed to like it.
This is the most amazing thing. It's the greatest story. It's so great. Like, people were just like throwing out all these superlatives about how amazing a computer game story. Like, I've never read a story so great in a computer game. I'm like, this is total
that,
shit.
It's, I mean, people that don't read books.
Yeah,
I think
so.
I think
it's
ultimately
for
that's
a game,
the problem.
It's great, maybe.
Yeah.
Wait, is it even good for a game?
I was,
or is it just horrible?
Un-fucking interested after,
okay.
after an hour and a half. And I was like, this has to get good sometime. And I'm like, it's basically, you're talking about reading data logs in Final Fantasy. It's just reading a bunch of data logs. That's all you're doing. Mm. You're like, oh, the you just see what's going to happen, and it's so horrible, but yet you have to keep reading. I'm like, I do not have to keep reading. This is dumb. So I don't know. Maybe it gets better. Maybe I'm not giving it enough of a chance, but there are other things in my life I can be reading. There's a game
in
the
phone book,
Da New Guys, that I played for like 10 minutes. And that actually could be kind of good. It's a point-and-click adventure. So it feels... It's basically Monkey Island, except your characters are...
Dude bros?
Professional wrestlers.
Oh, or that.
That one actually looked kind of cute. Yeah.
So it looks kind of cute. I think it could be good. I played a very little bit of it. Looks kind of fun. There's a game called Mini Flake, which is a roguelike that maybe there's some hidden depth to it. I, you know, did 10 minutes. It's grayscale. It only plays in, like, a postage stamp size resolution. And I was just like, whatever.
Well, there was that game...
Can't be bothered.
Passage, I think, which was played in a really minimal...
Yes, but
that was great.
Is...
That was...
A piece of artwork.
Yeah, yeah.
This is straight up roguelike, like, you know, gain some levels. It's got like 40 classes. I started the game. It's like, choose your class. I'm like, okay, arrow right. Kept going. There's like a million classes. It's like paladin, barbarian, warrior, sword guy, another sword guy, yet another guy with a sword. This one's got a shield.
Sword
dude. What are we doing?
Sword bro, sword man. So it's basically like all the Mega Man villains in one game.
I guess, yeah.
Hero Man.
A game
saving up the good one.
Waves, which I think is some kind of puzzler, which I have not even tried yet. And the one that I really liked and made it worth playing, Super Amazing Wagon Adventure.
Yeah!
Did you play it, Mike?
No, not yet. That's how excited I am. Okay. I haven't played it yet.
Dude, it's really
I was rebuilding
good.
The machine. I didn't have time.
So when I described it to these guys over IM, I said, guys.
It was like that 4chan meme with the Velociraptor or the Pterodactyl.
What if Oregon Trail had
good.
An electronica background and was a roguelike and was a bullet hell shooter? Super Amazing Wagon Adventure. So fundamentally, it's a roguelike. The gameplay is bullet hell. At the beginning of the game, but the motif is, as I said, Oregon Trail. So at the beginning of the game, you start out, you can choose your wagons, and you can unlock different wagons based on getting different achievements. You kick off the game, you just run through it, and random stuff happens to your party as is, this is sort of the Oregon Trail slash roguelike tie-over. You know, you'll find random things, you'll have different encounters, you'll get to a river, and your choice is, A, to ford the river.
Yeah, ford, yeah.
B, to jump across it, like find a cliff, and fling your wagon across the whole river, and crash on the other side, and sometimes you make it, and sometimes you crash into a bee's nest, and then you have to fight a bunch of bees. It's just one of those ridiculous over-the-top...
Fight a bunch of bees!
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty great. You'll get out of the wagon to, you know, collect berries, and then, you know, 50 bears will come and run at you, or you'll go into a cave, and sometimes the cave has, you know, a bunch of carcasses that you get a bunch of meat. Other times, it's filled with giant spiders, and you fight the spiders. So...
Also, it's super amazing.
It is, and the soundtrack, the electronica is pretty good too.
And this whole Royale bundle is PC,
mm-hmm. And I think it's like $5.85 right now is all the right. Average price.
Cool. Thanks to me, it was $5.84, and then I bought it and went it up a cent. Thanks to me.
So
sorry.
The final thing I want to talk about is I played Journey with my mom.
All right,
I played. Dude, we sweet. Played this weekend, yesterday actually, for.
I didn't realize you could do same
couple
machine
hours
multiplayer.
It wasn't multiplayer.
Oh,
I took Josh's PS3 to my mom's house and we played it there.
Oh, she just watched you play?
No, she played.
And you also played?
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, insofar as I sat on the couch next to her.
Right, but
we
she controlled it, is what you're saying. Okay.
This is the first video game she's ever played, other than Drop 7, and maybe like a game or two of NES Mario, like literally a life or two. And it was really
Did
fascinating.
Did you make sure you were online?
Yes. Yeah. Made
Critical.
Sure we were online.
Crucial.
So we're going to play through the rest of it. We got, you know, maybe two or three levels in, two areas in. Some thoughts. We'll get deeper into it when we've played the whole thing. But I picked that game because, you know, it's super visually stunning, and my mom's a very visual person. She does watercolor, et cetera. And I was like, oh, this is a great game because it's incredibly beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's just a total pleasure and a joy. There's nothing gamey about this game at all. That game is so fucking gamey. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, like, no, it's way gamier than Flower.
For someone who has never... Yes, it is gamier than Flower.
Flower is the thing I put people in front of if they're really not gamers.
Literally
at all.
Never. And maybe I ought to have done that, but I just wanted her to experience it.
Yeah.
So it's first of all it's twin stick controls, dual analog controls. Getting used to that takes a long time.
Or you just tilt.
Or you can tilt, yeah. But there's a lot of, you know, there's button pressing and yeah. So literally learning how to hold
but
the controller.
There's like one button.
Yeah, there's two buttons. There's two buttons. There's your
yeah, to jump and communicate.
Your chime and your right. Yeah. Using two buttons, there's a fairly complex, like if you need to call a bunch of things to shoot you up in the air, a bunch of scarf pieces, and then use your scarf and also fly forward and steer somewhere.
Yeah, that part's hard.
There's so much control input. And basically, she got frustrated a number of times playing the game that to me was a pure joy because there is so much, I don't know, just assumed knowledge that or acquired knowledge over 20 years of playing video games that she had none of.
Yeah.
Overall, she really liked it, enjoyed it. She's a Montessori educator, and one of the things she mentioned after we stopped was it gave her a new appreciation for what children are doing all the time. Like 100% of their world is a new world that they've never experienced before, and things it made me realize about how we all play video games is essentially the drive to iterate and the knowledge that just like trying everything is okay. Like she wasn't sure if she could do something, if she could interact with something that immediately stood out to me as a place to go check out as a gamer, wouldn't even be apparent as anything other than background or something pretty or anything. So that was very, very fascinating. There was,
right. It is a childlike, attitude to say, oh, there's something shiny. Let me go touch it.
Well, so right? What I'm saying is
that's a very childlike attitude, and a lot of people lose that as they get older.
There is
they're more afraid to fail, so they don't just try anything, I think.
So she did not even know if a point of interaction she wouldn't know that she had caused it, right? B, she wouldn't know if it was good or bad. You know, we're used to things like, hey, something happened. Let me try and iterate around that and try to cause it to happen more or less or see if I have some, you know, she would just like cause something to happen and then just go do something else for 30 minutes. And I'd be like, just try to, you did it, you know?
Yeah.
There was a really awesome moment where the person came in, the multiplayer companion came in for the first time. That was a big aha. Oh, cool. You know, that was a cool moment. Overall, it was a very fascinating experience. I can't wait for us to play some more of it. So that was really fun.
Totally.
Yeah.
I can't wait for your child to grow up so you can do these kinds of reports with him. Mm-hmm. That's going to also be sweet in a different way.
I recommend Flower. Mm-hmm. I've showed Flower to a number of non-gamers, and it doesn't always go as expected. It often goes not at all as expected. But at least one time to a total non-gamer, what happened was the person just enjoyed tilting the controller and like floating around for minutes and minutes, for like 15 minutes before doing anything gaming at all or realizing that there was more to experience besides just floating around in the wind and it feeling awesome.
Yeah,
that's right? Awesome. That it affords that.
Yeah, if there's a gamer type person at all, then they figure out pretty quickly that like the gamey goal is to collect petals and try to get like 100% of little unlockable plants and shit, right? But if they're not gamey, like they might not even notice that they are causing the flowers to bloom for the longest time. Mm-hmm. They'll just float around. They might not even learn that the buttons make the wind go faster for a while because there's only one button and it's every button makes the wind go faster. Otherwise, it's just tilt, and buttons make the wind go faster.
Yeah.
So it's even more simplified. And, with Journey, they got way more gamey, but it's still relatively accessible.
Yeah. And it was, and she was definitely getting the hang of it. Overall, it was a very, very enjoyable experience to go through, and I'm looking forward to doing more of it. So, yeah, that was cool.
Cool.
And I can't wait till we do more, and we can report on it in depth. So,
one more thing I want to mention real quick.
And I have something after you.
All right.
Further things.
Foddy.net guy. You know that guy?
Yeah.
Quap guy, et cetera. Yep. He released Clop, which is hilarious. That's great. Did you play that yet?
Yeah. I thought that's what you were going to say.
No, I was going to say he released this interactive music video.
Oh, yeah. I played
called
that.
Sun God, which is a song called Sun God by Cut Copy, this band. It's an interactive music video. That's technically two players because there's like two buttons that you use on different sides of the keyboard, mm-hmm. and there's like two little avatars on the screen, and the buttons like make that avatar go towards the other one. Mm-hmm. But you can play it with one person with just the two buttons. I played all the way through it, and I like tried to get as far as I could. I got pretty far. I filled that meter up like 80% or something. It's pretty long. The music's pretty rad. You get in this like groove of alternating the buttons if you can get the guys to swing around each other in the air. Man, that's I think that shit is probably the best thing Foddy has made yet.
Mm-hmm. And that actually came out before Klopp.
Oh, did it?
It did, yeah.
Okay.
It's fun. It's totally
it's rad.
In
Play
his
it.
Wheelhouse.
It's
yeah.
just like a one-time, 5-minute thing, maybe.
I wanted to mention, cue the mailbag song.
Mailbag, mailbag, we're gonna open the mailbag.
Mail!
All right,
we got a mail.
We got mail. Now, this email, it's from Martin Hosking.
Actually, can we go back?
Oh.
Briefly, we totally tore John Cox a new one. And for people, a.k.a. my mom, who did not know that John Cox is a very dear friend of yours and all of ours, she thought that we just totally ripped the shit out of that guy. She's like, I'm never writing your show again.
Oh,
she was actually, she's like kind of disappointed in me.
Oh,
I was like,
man.
No, we know him. Like, it's funny. That was a funny ha-ha thing. But yeah, people who do not know that we know John Cox and thought we were just like making terrible fun of him.
Okay, apparently we need to preface whether we know the people who write it. So Martin Hosking wrote us. We all know Martin.
Yeah.
He's a friend of ours.
And what a douche that guy is.
Oh, when Josh calls him Martine, I call him the hose king. He's the king of the hose. That's actually like, anyway. All right. So Martin, thank you for writing. Now, he wrote a really long email that I think if we still want to do our main topic, we can't go through the whole thing. But it was regarding our discussion on Olympic badminton, which you may recall, I think we did that. Was that last week or 2 weeks ago?
2 shows ago.
Yeah. We talked about how some of the teams were throwing games and they got caught and thrown out. And we had a discussion about whether they should have or whether there was actually – Josh was posing there's actually a problem with the tournament, how it's set up, and that you shouldn't – there should never be any incentive to throw games. They should have been able to forfeit. Anyway, I'm going to read the first paragraph and the last paragraph. Martin writes, I agree that the tournament may have been poorly designed, but in my naivety, I think/hope this view is more widely shared, have some sort of expectation for what the Olympics are and aren't. In nearly every sport, of course, everybody, it seems, bends the rules. Then every 4 years, I guess every two, if you count the winter as well, but I really don't like it as much. Jeez, Martin, what's wrong with Winter Olympics?
Harsh.
We suspend our cynicism and get to watch the spectacle of athletes from every nation competing on what hopefully is a levelish playing field. Where I think our perceptions diverge is our expectation for the Olympics as a whole. On a wide spectrum of views, yours is towards the cynical and mine is towards the naive. To me, the Olympics are different, or at least should be, from other sporting events, primarily because of what the founding principles of the Olympics are. He mentions what the oath is, a snippet from the Players' Code of Conduct, which states that it's basically not a good idea to, quote, not using one's best efforts to win a match, and, quote, conducting oneself in a manner that is clearly abusive or detrimental to the sport. His final paragraph, blaming the tournament design may be valid, but I think it's an ultimately flawed approach. In the end, the athletes are ultimately accountable, especially in the Olympics. To not blame the athletes is a slippery slope towards saying all cheating is okay as long as there's no rule specifically outlawing it. Anybody want to respond to that?
Yeah, so he has a great point. I totally agree in the sense that that holding players that cheat or break the rules accountable is important. I agree. You know, poor sportsmanship is bad. I agree. He compares it, I think, to soccer players faking injury,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's a bad move. It's one of the reasons I think soccer's stupid.
Among many others, obviously.
As an American.
As we learned playing FIFA.
Allowed to say, anyway. But, you know, I just want to say that my point before wasn't that, like, you know, these players in the badminton scandal had no blame at all. What I meant to intend was that having a rule in the code of conduct that says you must try to win every game is kind of hilariously unnecessary.
Naive, perhaps, right? You might say.
Like, what? Like, my point is that that rule shouldn't have to exist if the tournament design is better,
mm-hmm.
right?
That it's a poor solution.
Yeah, it's a poor solution to say you should try to win every game mm-hmm. rather than just make the structure of the tournament, like, always beneficial to try to win the games.
Right.
You know, it's obviously there's multiple people at fault. You know, poor sportsmanship is bad. you know, throwing games or faking injury, et cetera, is frowned upon, should, you know, maybe disqualify you, et cetera.
I think,
but,
Martin...
there's fault to lie in both places.
Yeah, I think that he really kind of nicely summed up in a more erudite fashion what I was trying to say, which was, during that conversation, which is the idea of the Olympics as something separate, something different from, you know, a professional match where we are trying to, or we would hope we're trying to, you know, hold those athletes to a higher standard, that it's, you know, more about shared humanity, et cetera, than about just pure competition and winning.
So in general, like, yeah, I mean, no one wants the athletes in any kind of competition to throw the game, and all the other valid points. It's just the Olympics we somehow hold even higher. So it hurts even just a little bit more
yeah.
when you see this kind of thing happen in the Olympics versus non-Olympics.
Yeah. It's true.
But in general, it still sucks.
And the role models. And, you know, if you applied those lessons to life, you know, in capitalism, I don't think, you know, all holds barred. You do whatever you need to do to get to the top
right.
and crush everyone below you. Obviously, you know, I don't agree with that. But I also am in favor of regulations that make that less possible.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But also, I think in a more limited
context... And
that context,
properly incentivize companies to act
right.
in responsible
right.
manners.
Right, properly yes. incentivize. But also in the more limited context of a specific game where you can explicitly define rules, you know.
Yeah, right. Do it well.
Do it well.
Yeah. Do a good job, tournament organizers.
Martin, thank you for your email. We really appreciate your thoughtful reply to our discussion. And
yes,
other
it
people,
was brilliant.
Feel free to write in with your argument either for or against or completely nothing to do, non sequitur, mail@theescortmission.com. We appreciate it.
Yes, please. So, we all just watched a movie. We watched, as we did before with Indie Game the Movie. Now, we just watched a documentary called Ecstasy of Order, which, as we were saying before, is a great title.
Does it have a subtitle?
Is it? Does it?
I think it's like...
Oh, the Masters...
The Search for the Tetris Master or something
yeah.
like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a Tetris movie.
It's a movie about Tetris, and specifically NES Tetris, and an attempt to crown a champion of NES Tetris.
Because up until that point... There was no official Tetris
up until I guess
World
a couple
Master.
Years ago.
It was in August 2010, so about 2 months ago,
yeah.
or 2 years ago, yeah.
So,
and this is a post King of very very post King of Kong
uh-huh.
documentary.
Yeah,
it, like they early on they interview people that said I watched King of Kong and only became aware of Twin Galaxies and the
uh-huh.
and the record breaking
yeah.
scene for video games. As a result of that, and therefore I tried to start breaking Tetris records because I was really good at Tetris.
Yeah. yeah.
It was, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. It was, I mean, the last video game movie we watched, Indie Game the Movie, had a very different, it had a much, it was almost much more, I guess, editorialized. Like, it had a viewpoint that I feel like it was trying to push,
mm-hmm.
whether it was overtly... Or not overt, I feel like it did, whereas this was much more of kind of a neutral, here's just something interesting that someone's doing, let's peek in on how that happened.
Well,
that
all the subjects were more happy-go-lucky,
yeah.
and less, like, dickishly competitive.
Yeah.
Like, they were more, it was really friendly competition in general, not a lot of spite between players.
It was almost weird, because it almost kind of drained...
A little bit of the drama.
The drama. It was not nearly as dramatic as it could have been if they framed it differently.
Yeah,
but I'm glad they didn't gin up like reality TV drama just
right,
to make
right.
a better movie.
But there is no one to hate as like you hate Billy Mitchell. Not hate, but there's no antagonist guy.
Yeah.
You know, to sort of dislike.
Instead of an antagonist, there's like a shady character, and you don't know much about Thor because he doesn't show up until
kind of a mysterious guy
later on,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, that was cool though.
But he turns out to be like a genial, nice dude.
yeah,
you know, he's just like a totally normal dude
who's just like preternaturally really good at Tetris.
Yeah.
Just a note, Thor Ackerland. One
spoilers.
What, his name is a spoiler?
I don't know. What are you
going to
say?
You just spoiled it by saying he showed up. That was like a major reveal.
Well, you expect him to be like somewhere in the
film.
Well,
maybe, or maybe
he's
going to
talk about what he does as a child.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm just going to talk about why Thor Akerlund is someone that you should know is that in the early 90s, I think 1990, Nintendo did a Nintendo World Championship thing, which was like, you know, there's lots of gaming tournaments now, but this was like the only thing that was anybody knew about then, and they invited a bunch of people, and I don't think it was... Yeah, it was the World Championship, so they held it all over the place. I actually went and competed in this tournament back in 1990. I remember driving with my dad to some kind of, you know...
Like a sports arena or
something. Yeah, sports arena kind of thing. And I'm trying to think where I was in 1990. I think it was in Virginia. Yeah, so somewhere in Virginia
Beach. What game did you play?
It
was three games, right?
It was three games.
It was like Rad Racer.
Yeah, you had to race like a track in Rad Racer. You had to get like 10 gold coins in Super Mario Brothers 1, and then you had to just like get the highest possible score in Tetris. So
10 coins?
Yeah, or maybe it was 100. I don't know. It was some, you had to get a certain number of coins. You could do it on the first level, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't make it past the first round because I'm not that great of a gamer, but it was cool to just compete. I mean, it was, it kind of legitimized, you know, the last 4 or 5 years of me just sitting at home a lot playing Nintendo. So Thor Akerlund won, I guess, the finals of this championship, and he was like, you know, the
Nintendo World Champion,
the best Nintendo player of all time, and that was what he was known for. And then for like the next 20 years, he kind of faded into the background and didn't make a lot of noise, and no one really knew what he was doing. But the guy, Robin, whatever his last name is, the guy who organizes this tournament of Tetris Masters, you know, gets him to come out of retirement and, you know, like show his stuff and prove that he's still good. And he's still really flipping good at Tetris.
But a lot of them are.
Yeah. Oh, they're everyone, all, these guys are not playing the game that you and I are playing. They are high level players. That was the most interesting thing about it that Indie Game, the movie, didn't do is they really, this was almost like an instructional video on how to play Tetris and how to be good at it. And it was really fascinating.
It goes into a lot of detail about kind of the fundamentals that are required. The thing that, so the most mind-blowing, okay, there were two mind-blowing, as a guy who plays the most Tetris on this podcast, there were a couple
mind-blowing
moments.
You did nominate it as the best game ever.
One is that one of the players who made it into this tournament and who is really, really highly, has one of the highest Tetris scores ever for this particular version of Tetris, NES Tetris, had literally never seen a T-spin before. And plays the game only rotating pieces in one direction. That is goddamn mind-boggling.
It was mind-blowing.
The fact that someone can score, she scored like 800,000 something, and the total possible high score is 999,000.
And when Robin went to meet her and watch play and interview her and invite her to come out for the tournament, you watched her play briefly and said, "Oh my God, you're a one button player."
Yeah.
She's like, "What do you mean?" Like, you mean.
He's like, "You only press
everyone
A.
Is,
oh, what did she say?
Doesn't the B button do the same as the A button?"
She never tried
She's like, "Why would you press B when you can press A?" Like, unbelievable. She had never seen a T-spin before. For those who don't know what that is, as you're dropping a piece, you can keep rotating it. You cannot – there's a difference between versions of Tetris, which is do they see the blocks as existing in physical space or not? Can a block, in other words, pass through another block? Some games, some versions allow you to do that. So you could, for example, slide a piece in under another piece but then rotate it out. But to do that, it would have to pass through some – through pieces. Some games allow you to do that, some others don't.
And I don't think this version lets you do that.
I don't believe it does. Yeah. The T-spin is essentially doing that, you know, dropping a piece down and rotating with the T-block, sort of keying it into a shape, you know, if there's overhang. Your enemy is essentially overhang. Anyway, it's an advanced technique of rotation, but one that is like, if you were playing the tutorial for Tetris, which doesn't exist, but if somebody had written one, this would definitely be like the advanced stage of the tutorial would be to tell you. It's definitely a technique that you need to know to be able to play.
To do well. You
at
would
all.
Think.
You would think.
And yet she was like,
and she was goddamn amazing
world record holder.
You know what, though? I find this very similar to the way that I type, whereas I'm not a home row typer. Mm-hmm. I use maybe like three fingers on my left hand and like two fingers on my right hand or something like that, and I can still type like 90 words a minute.
You can type decently, but you wouldn't think that you could compete with the fastest typist in the world like that.
True, but I think 90 words this per minute would be is like, way above average for not even using the home row.
It's above average, but this would be like her score of 800 and something thousand would be like you typing 180 words
right,
a minute.
Right.
It's like
being like 4% off the possible maximum typing speed.
It's like Django Reinhardt like being an amazing guitarist with like three fingers.
Right. True.
Or or Beethoven being fucking blind or deaf.
Yeah.
Blind? What?
Sorry. You know.
The other amazing thing, the other mind-blowing part was one of the guys, they just showed a little, you know, 10-second little snippet of Tetris play for one of these dudes during a time when they were talking about kind of seeing the game at a higher level. There were a few moments like this, but one in particular that keeps coming into my mind where a guy put a four-piece block, the long block that you need to drop in to get your Tetrises. He didn't have a Tetris to make, and he put it supported only on one block on the left, just sticking out into space,
mm-hmm.
which is like the worst, an obvious mistake, and then totally solved it with like three more pieces. And I just watched that in complete awe, like not even comprehending what was happening. And it was just a weird moment where
he made this line that completed itself like four or five rows above
with
his,
a huge amount
of
empty space. Yes, it was
just
very
all
bizarre.
The most empty space I've ever seen under a line.
And let's mention that all of this ridiculously crazy playing
at like level
is
19
at level
speed.
19 and above, which for most people they've never even seen level 19. Like, and the fact that they are playing in the 20s, which are even more mind blowing. Yeah, it
really made me want to go play impressive. NES Tetris. Mm. As a movie. I think it's not as good either as King of Kong or as Indie Game the Movie, just as a film.
It's just not
but
super compelling.
It's still really
It's still very good.
Yeah. Recommendable.
Fun to see. I really liked it.
Yeah,
totally. You
know, it's well done.
Yeah, it was good. The music in the movie is not that great.
Yeah, just another note.
There's almost no music. It's really quiet.
Yeah.
We made an interesting bet before, like the over-under on when the main... I think it's like song A Tetris theme would come in. Yeah. The one that everybody hums when you think of the Tetris theme. And I thought it would come in pretty early. And Josh thought it would come in the later half.
The climax.
And I don't want to tell you when it came in. No, I'll just tell you because obviously we're spoiling the movie. It came in like an hour, like 1 hour and like 13 minutes or something. And only for, you know, 5 seconds and only sort of like in the background of someone's game playing. Like it was not put in the forefront.
They clearly did not have the license to play that song.
Yeah. And it seemed like a lot of the game players, I mean, a lot of them had headphones. So maybe they were listening to the music of the game. Maybe they're listening to something totally different. The one girl had earplugs
just
in.
Just plugs.
So she was just trying to drown out all distractions and focus. So I don't know. It's very interesting how they all have different play styles, but
it was fairly thrilling to watch that final play. They edited that pretty well.
Yeah,
pretty great.
And made
it exciting.
Fun to go to.
Yeah.
I didn't think, you know, most people probably wouldn't get super jazzed about Tetris or competitive Tetris, but they definitely made you care.
Man, I got to play some NES Tetris.
Yeah, it was good. It made me want to play Tetris.
I have a SNES controller and I have NES emulators, but I don't have a NES or access to one.
Yeah, I really kind of almost feel a little sacrilegious not playing it on an actual NES.
I'm not going to go buy a NES to just do this.
I don't know. If you really cared about the game, you would. You'd buy it on eBay and do it right.
Yeah.
But yeah, good game. You should watch that.
Use a SNES with a USB.
What?
Use a SNES controller with a USB plug.
That's what I'm doing. That was one of the best purchases I ever made, was the SNES to USB adapter.
That thing's great.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That's one of the more perfect
controllers ever.
It
has such
a... The dog bone.
The name... Well, the... Oh, the dog bone. Yes, yes. The name of that adapter, it's called the Super Smart Joy, which is a total, like, you know, you are using this to pirate stuff type of name, you know?
That was not made in America, is what you're saying.
Definitely not. So... This has been the Escort Mission podcast. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it.
Play Guild Wars.
Josh says play Guild Wars.
Don't
Mike,
play
what do
the
you
Sims
say?
Free play.
Don't play the
don't
Sims
go
free
there.
Play.
But play FF13. Don't listen to the critics. It's good.
Play games. Thanks for listening.
Play hopscotch. Whatever. Lates.
See ya.